Sitting and watching a three and a half hour game is laborious sometimes, but we intend to have a much faster game. We're going to try to get to 2 hours. That's our goal. That's an experience, I think, that most people would enjoy and doesn't take up a lot of their time.
No shit, Sherlock.
It's business time, baby.
The Sala Monster sounds off.
My client.
Mama Monster.
Conquered the street.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat.
Delete.
You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
It is Royal Rumble Sunday, January 28th, 2018. Welcome to the 532nd installment of the Sala Monster Sounds Off. I am the Sala Monster. I'm still on a high from last night's show, honestly. That was a hell of a show, and I kind of feel bad for the main roster before all these big, you know, pay-per-views, the big four, the big five, whatever. They're always handicapped because they have to follow the NXT TakeOver show the night before. And in this case, it's the NXT show that happened in the same building. So remember last night, remember those big matches and some of those crowd reactions when you watch the Royal Rumble tonight? Because unless they got something really big up their sleeve, I'm not sure that they could quite match those levels. And so it kind of sucks for them, but it's great for the rest of us. I'm going to talk about TakeOver a little bit later on. There's just so much stuff to get into this week. It'll be a little bit before I talk about it, but I will get to that. But as I said, tonight is the Royal Rumble. And you know what that means. That means that it is the final hours, if you are listening to this on Royal Rumble Sunday, the final hours of our fifth annual Rumble Pool. In the private Facebook group, we have over 2,000 entrants, so only slightly under the mark we set last year. I think last year it was around 2,200. We're well over 2,000 already, still several hours left to go. I know Zach Hulker is accepting entries right up until probably an hour or two before the pay-per-view begins. We're up to about 66 total pools, I think, maybe 67 at this point, I think he might be working on. And there are prizes. So the way this is going to work is everybody's been assigned a number. If you're getting in on this late, get in on it because there's still time to get yourself a random number. During the men's Royal Rumble match tonight, if the person who wins the Rumble enters the Rumble at the number that you drew in our pool, you are one of the winners. I say one of because, again, there's going to be 66 or 67 pools, so there'll be that many winners. All of those names then move into the Ultimate Rumble Pool, which is where I randomly select three winners for the third place, second place, and first place prizes. Not confirmed yet. Normally I do it on the show the following week. I might just do a Facebook Live video tomorrow on the page and pick the winners at random there. I'm not sure yet. But it's, again, completely random. There's a website I use. You could probably even find it if you go to type in randomizer online. That's what I use. It jumbles up all the names and you pick a winner. All the winners will get shout outs here on this show, but, in some cases, you know, people have been kind enough to donate, prizes to some of the winners here. Just be aware that you will have to share with them an address for them to ship to if you want those prizes, whether it's a shirt or what have you. So if that's something you're not comfortable with, you certainly have the right to refuse that prize. But if anything, if that's the case, I'll just buy, you know, I'll buy you a Sound Off shirt myself, from our store. But just know these other prizes are being donated from the, other listeners who said they really wanted to contribute something. So they may not be coming directly from me. Third place winner right now, third place winner will get a $25 gift card to Pro Wrestling Tees that's donated by Ron Falcon. So thank you to Ron. Second place winner will receive any WWE shirt of your choosing from WWEshop.com, as donated by the man himself, Zach Hulker. And the first place winner, any two shirts of your choice from Pro Wrestling Tees donated by Julian Cannon. And Alvin Siegertz in the Facebook group has a mystery box of wrestling items, a mystery box of wrestling goodies he will send to the first place winner as well. And again, if you want a free Sound Off shirt on me, free Sound Off shirt of your choosing. So the first place winner gets a whole bunch of different stuff. But again, it's all in good fun. If you want to sign up, there's still time. Go to facebook.com, and search out the private Solomonster Sounds Off group. You have to be approved, so you're working against the clock here because you need me to approve you to get in. But definitely get in on that because it's always a lot of fun. I picked number 7, so that's who I'm rooting for tonight. Audible, you guys know the drill. Use our link, get a free book. Audibletrial.com/Solomonster is the link to use. As I speak, there is an ongoing flash sale, a Royal Rumble sale on our t-shirt store, prowrestlingtees.com/Solomonster Sounds Off. You can get 15% off all shirts in our store. All you got to do is use the coupon code RUMBLE at checkout. This sale is ongoing until 1 p.m. Eastern tomorrow, that being Monday, January 29th. So you got less than 24 hours, but get in on that. You can get 15% off all Sound Off shirts. And finally, if you want to support the podcast with a PayPal donation, I thank you. TheSolomonster.com is the place to go. You'll see the button on the right-hand side. It is open 24 hours a day. You can donate whatever you want, whenever you want. I appreciate all the support. Thank you this week to John Luis Cannon Lopez, Deadpool James Herrera. These, you know, we have the Royal Rumble tonight. This is the Rumble roll call here. We have Luis Cannon. We have Deadpool James Herrera. We have the Florida Freebird, Brian Becerra. Out of Control, Cody Thomas. I would do the Vince McMahon voice here, but it's too early in the morning for that. Hot Stuff, Hector Pena, Beast Mode, Brock Joseph, Raymond the Mountie Medina, Massgrave, Micah Harshaw. You can check out his movie podcast on YouTube, youtube.com/Micah Harshaw. Damn Straight, Michael Dorsey, The Dark Serpent, Derek Gibbs, The Marietta Mahler, Alexandru Mata, The Velvet Revolver, Robert Murray, Alvin Chainsaw Siegerts, The Chicago Slayer, Willie Eicher, The Show Off, Corey Van Dam, Max the Axe Velado, Stephen Foulmouth Fowler, John, More Money, More Problems, Morin, Dan the Man Larson, The DC Slayer, Marcus Cross, Faith, Hard Knocks Harvey, The Raven, Zach Bernstein, Poison Pill, Lindsay Manns, The Savior of Misbehavior, Sean Bradley, and also Emilio Raphael. Thank you so much for all of your support. It is appreciated more than I can put into words. Now, we have just a shit ton of stuff to get into here. I am going to talk about the XFL. I'm going to talk about Enzo Amore. I have some final thoughts on Raw 25 and the whole debacle from the Manhattan Center. A couple of other news and notes, and of course, my NXT TakeOver review. I want to watch at least part of that New Japan show, The New Beginnings Part 1. I know we had Tanahashi and Suzuki for the Intercontinental Championship. I was hoping to watch it before this podcast. I did not have time, but I will watch it. I heard it was an outstanding match. One of many outstanding matches so far this weekend. Before I get to this year's Royal Rumble, though, there's news on next year's Royal Rumble. The announcement came this week that the 2019 Royal Rumble will be emanating from Chase Field in Phoenix, Arizona, home of the Arizona Diamondbacks. This will be the first time WWE runs a Major League Baseball stadium since WrestleMania 19, which was Safeco Field in 2003, which I thought was a beautiful location, actually, for a wrestling show. A little bit of sunlight peeked in. This stadium does have a retractable roof, so they can open or close it depending on how the weather is like that day. The highest attendance ever recorded in this stadium was just shy of 50,000 for a Diamondbacks game against the Boston Red Sox many years ago. The schedule of events looks like this for the weekend. Saturday, January 26th, they're going to be doing NXT TakeOver from the Talking Stick Resort Arena. Ah, yes, my old friend, the Talking Stick. Sunday, the 27th, is the Rumble at Chase Field. Monday, the 28th, is Raw from the Talking Stick. And SmackDown the next night will also emanate from the Talking Stick. That stick's going to be doing a lot of talking that week, apparently. I may have to make my Talking Stick debut that weekend. I would not mind an Arizona vacation in the dead of winter. So if I was going to go to Arizona at any point during the year, January or February probably would be the time I would want to go. So it doesn't sound like a bad place to be. So we may have to get a little horseman vacation going here. They even have a swimming pool and a hot tub out in Wright Field. They put that in there when they created the stadium. So, you know, if you've got $5,000, I think it is, to rent it out. If you've got $5,000 laying around, you want to drop it on a suite, you can go swimming in the outfield during the Royal Rumble match. Let's talk about the 2018 Royal Rumble tonight from the city of brotherly love, although it isn't always so brotherly, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. It was a hell of a crowd last night. Depending on what they have up their sleeve tonight, though, they may not be so kind to WWE. Having flashbacks here to the last time the Rumble was in Philly, which was 2015, which you guys know is just my favorite Royal Rumble match of all time. No, I'm kidding. The kickoff show tonight will have three matches. Bobby Roode will defend his United States Championship in an open challenge. When I heard that, I thought to myself, you know, I hear there's a certain cowboy who's a free agent. I wonder if he'll be in town tonight. I think the dumbest move would be for them to go with Dolph Ziggler in this spot because it just makes absolutely no sense given the story, you know, the story that they're trying to tell with him giving up the title and walking out on it, which created this whole tournament in the first place, which ended up with Roode becoming champion. So for Ziggler to just show up and be like, hey, you know what, I'm having second thoughts, I want my belt back, would be pretty stupid. So I'm hoping that's not what WWE does. I think almost, literally almost any other move they make, any other person they put in there, would be better than them just putting Dolph Ziggler in that spot. We have Luke Gallows and Karl Anderson going up against The Revival in a rematch from Raw last Monday. Revival needs this win. You know, you knew they were going to play the comedy role last Monday. They were going to get beaten up by DX or beaten up by a bunch of different legends, and that's exactly what happened. It was DX, and it was the Balor Club, and they got pedigreed and super kicked and just generally killed dead. That was their role that night on that show, and that's fine as long as they're not booked to be a joke going forward. So they got beaten up. They lost on Monday. They got to win this match tonight. And we have the Cruiserweight six-man tag with Kalisto, Lince Dorado, and Gran Metalik taking on Drew Gulak, TJP, and Jack Gallagher. I'll pick the babyfaces to win. So then we get into the pay-per-view itself. And tonight is the first ever 30-woman Royal Rumble match with special guest ring announcer Maria Menounos, who had surgery last year for a brain tumor. They showed her on camera. She was ringside last night for the NXT TakeOver show. Very cool to see her doing so well. As you would imagine, surgery for a brain tumor is nothing to sneeze at there. That's pretty serious stuff. And look, she's a lifelong WWE fan. You know, you got to respect that. I mean, hell, she inducted Bob Backlund into the Hall of Fame. And not just because they said, hey, we want you to be a part of the show. Why don't you go ahead and induct this guy, Bob Backlund? She wanted to. She wrote a custom speech. She is obsessed with Bob Backlund. She remembers watching him on TV when she was a little girl. Right? You'd have to be a big fan to want to induct Bob Backlund. And actually, do you know how they came to meet the two of them for the first time? I thought this was an interesting story. So her husband is this guy, Kevin Undergarrow. He used to be the head writer for a little show on MTV called Singled Out, which I used to like watching. I'll admit it. I used to like watching. Now, I used to like watching it more for Jenny McCarthy than for it being a good show, to be fair. But I used to watch that show. Anyway, so her husband, when he was writing for the show, got Bob Backlund to do a guest spot on one of the episodes. He put Baby Cupid in the chicken wing, which I still remember, actually. So she was finally able to meet the man at that point. I guess he must have gotten her to meet him. And I don't even know why I'm telling you that story. I just thought it was kind of interesting to tell. But you know what? Since I'm telling random stories, here's one more. Stone Cold Steve Austin once did a guest spot on another MTV game show that didn't last very long called Idiot Savants. I don't know how many of you remember it. I don't think it lasted longer than one season, maybe two. Idiot Savants was co-created by a guy named Chris Kresge, who I've talked about here on the podcast. Kresge went on to be a writer for WWE, a pretty damn good one by all accounts, and probably doesn't get the credit that he deserves. But see, I love how it always comes back to wrestling here. Anyway, Austin, I bring this up because Austin did a guest spot one time. I've never been able to find the video online. There are points over the years where I've tried searching for it. I cannot find it. There's only a handful of Idiot Savant episodes that have been uploaded to YouTube. And every time I would check them, none of them are the Austin episode. I mean, his spot was so quick. I mean, he just kind of walked on set in the middle, did his thing and left. But I still have it burned in my brain after all these years. Somewhere I have the audio saved of his spot. I have no idea where it is, but it's terrible quality because I recorded it off my TV at the time. But he came on to read a poem. I'm almost sure I've read this poem to you guys on the show before, but if not, I'm going to do it again. Because I'll never forget the words. I still remember to this day. He called it The Traveler. And it was just comical that here's Stone Cold Steve Austin. And this, I'm pretty sure this was either right before he truly went babyface or not long after. So it wasn't like peak Austin, but like just before. But he comes on, he's like, he's going to read this poem called The Traveler. And there was somebody in the background, like, strumming a guitar or a banjo, you know, in the background while he read it. And he just stands there and he goes, you know, and it does this in the Austin voice, of course. He goes, you know, I've traveled the world the last few years. Because sometimes I think of home, and even Stone Cold has to fight the tears. Because another car, bus, or plane takes me to faraway places. What I remember most is all the smiling faces. And everybody in the audience is all like, ah, how sweet, right? But then he finishes. He goes, short people, tall people, people with glasses. The bottom line is I'll whip all your asses. And the entire audience just erupts into cheers. And then he leaves. It was literally all they brought him on to do. I'm thinking of MTV shows. I just thought of that for some reason. Has nothing to do with the Women's Rumble. Let's get back on topic here. Here is the current list of participants. See, you never know what you're going to get here on this podcast. Here's the list of participants thus far in the Women's Royal Rumble. Now, there's 30 spots. And so far, last I checked, we only have 18 filled. Asuka, Naomi, Ruby Riott, Natalya, Sasha Banks, Bayley, Mandy Rose, Sonya Deville, Liv Morgan, Sarah Logan, Carmella, Lana, Tamina, Nia Jax, Mickey James, Becky Lynch, Dana Brooke, and Alicia Fox. That is the official current list as I record this of women in the Royal Rumble match. Obviously, they're going to flesh it out with a bunch of legends. They're going to flesh it out with a bunch of NXT talents. I would like to think that we're going to get both Lita and Trish Stratus in the Rumble, and hopefully we'll get a little confrontation between the two of them. But Lita, interestingly enough, who was on the artwork on the commemorative chairs that they gave out to people at the Manhattan Center for Raw 25, and maybe they had chairs also at the Barclays Center, I don't know, but she claims that she was never even invited to Raw 25. Which just seems wrong, given that they've used her. I mean, it's not like, I don't think they're on bad terms. They've used her not too long ago for the kickoff shows. It's not like they never mention her name or she's banned from being mentioned or anything like that. So it was kind of odd that you wouldn't have her there to trot her out on stage like they did Trish and everyone else. I thought that was kind of weird, unless they just wanted to save her as a total surprise for tonight. But they had Trish on Monday. I would have to think Trish will be there tonight. But hopefully we'll get a little something between the two of them for old time's sake. I'd like to see like Molly Holly in there, Eve Torres, someone else we didn't see on Monday. Eve is another one who really improved over time. Like there's certain people, Trish is a great example. It's not like Trish was any great shakes in the ring when she started out, but she was a model, right? I mean, that's not why they brought her in. Over time, she developed into one of the best they've ever had. Even Candice Michelle, who I was never a big fan of. You know, she took it seriously and trained, and she suffered injuries, and she got better over time. And Eve was one of the better ones, I thought. By the time she left, I was really sad to see her go. They brought her in, her and her husband. I forgot his first name. It's one of the Gracies. Anyway, they brought them in to guest coach at the Performance Center. So there's a relationship there. I don't see any reason why we can't see Eve in the Royal Rumble tonight. I was going to say Alundra Blaze, but, you know, She'll be there as part of the kickoff panel, but she had a knee replacement early last month. So I don't know. All you knee replacement people out there, all you medical experts, tell me if I'm wrong, but I'm guessing 6 weeks is probably not enough time to heal up from an injury like that. Injury being knee replacement surgery. Anyway, guess who's going to be ringside providing commentary for the Women's Royal Rumble match? Of course, the queen bee herself, the mother hen, Stephanie McMahon. Get ready to hit that SAP button on your TV remote. There was a fan who tweeted at Stephanie asking if there's a way for them to change the language for the announce team so they don't have to listen to her on commentary. They got balls. They tagged her in the tweet and just went to her directly, so I give them credit for that. And anyway, one of the automated bots on the WWE Network Twitter account responded with instructions on how to change the language. It's like, I think they took the tweet down since then, but you can't make this stuff up. And I see all these other people, it's interesting, I see all these other people now asking, oh, I wish there was a mute option for commentary. All these people coming around finally to my idea. I've been advocating for a mute commentary option on the network for years. Maybe we'll finally get it one of these days. I don't think it's a bad idea either, honestly. It's not just a matter of, hey, your announcers sometimes are just absolutely unbearable to listen to. I think that there are certain people who actually might like the shows better sometimes when they just have no commentary, and you just get the ambiance of the crowd. It's almost like you're there live, right? I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think you should at least try to give people that option. I don't see why they can't do something like that. So yeah, Stephanie is obviously, she's entering this Rumble. I mean, come on. She's either, everybody's like, oh, she's coming in number 30. I don't know that she's going to be a number 30. I would say 30 or 29. And the reason I say 29 and probably coming in, right, and slapping everybody out over the top rope. No, but if she enters at 29, it's because you know who is coming out at number 30. You know who happens to be my pick. I'm sticking with the prediction I made a few weeks ago, despite all of her denials and all the photos that she's posted over the last few days on social media. Hey guys, look, I'm in Colombia. Hey, look where I am. She's kind of going overboard with it. Ronda Rousey, I believe, will be the special surprise entrant, or one of the surprise entrants, and will win the Women's Royal Rumble match. And in doing so, she will eliminate Stephanie McMahon to a huge ovation. Because if there's one thing, if they're worried that Ronda might get booed, it's a wrestling purist crowd, they want Asuka to win or Becky Lynch to win, they don't want to see Ronda Rousey come in and win. If there's one thing they could do that will guarantee a huge pop, it's her coming in and dumping out Stephanie McMahon. It's just a surefire pop. And then Rousey goes on to challenge Asuka for the Raw Women's title at WrestleMania after Asuka wins the championship from Alexa Bliss at the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view. That's my prediction. Now, TMZ caught up with Rousey. Rousey said, I'm not going to be there because I'm headed to Colombia for a movie shoot, which is true. She's in the middle of filming scenes for this movie, Mile 22, I think it's called. But I think she'll sneak back into the country if she hasn't already. Sneak back into the country, you know, because the wall hasn't been built yet. She'll sneak back in under a hoodie with the glasses and the mustache disguise, and she'll win the whole thing. The Usos defend their SmackDown Tag Team titles in a 2-out-of-3 falls match against Chad Gable and Shelton Benjamin. If there's one match on this show, I think, that has the potential to rival anything on that TakeOver show last night, it's that match. That could be the sleeper match of the show if they give them time. I say if because you would think a 2-out-of-3 falls match, this should go kind of long, but WWE has a pattern in the past of doing these 2-out-of-3 falls deals where the first team will win the first fall in like 2 minutes, and it's like, what the fuck is the point of it even being a 2-out-of-3 falls match if you're just rushing through the first one or two falls, right? That's stupid. Hopefully they don't do that and they give this some time. I think the Usos are going to retain. They're my pick. We have the Raw Tag Team Champions Seth Rollins and Jason Jordan taking on the former champions Sheamus and Cesaro. We have seen a little bit of dissension on Raw in the past week or two, including an accidental knee to the face by Jordan, or Rollins, I should say, to Jordan. So I think they're already building dissension there between the two of them. I think it'll boil over tonight. I think Sheamus and Cesaro win back the Raw Tag Team titles. I'm going with them. We have AJ Styles defending his WWE Championship in a 2-on-1 handicap match against Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. Kevin Owens is still nursing an injury. I believe it might be a back injury. He may not be able to do a whole hell of a lot tonight, but that's why Sami Zayn is in there. So lucky them, they made this a handicap match before they even knew that Owens was hurt. Or maybe they knew Owens was hurt. You know what? Maybe that's the whole point of this. Maybe this is a handicap match because they knew from the get-go that Owens was hurt, and they just didn't know how serious the injury was, and they wanted to make sure they at least had somebody in there who could work the majority of the match. And based on what we saw with Zayn and Styles on SmackDown last Tuesday, you know what? That might not be such a bad thing, but I still think AJ is winning. I think AJ is retaining. He should absolutely walk into WrestleMania with the WWE title. They're insane if they take this championship off of him. Unless he loses it and then wins the Royal Rumble or something crazy like that, they would be out of their minds to take the championship off AJ and have anybody but him walking into WrestleMania to defend that title. Speaking of titles, we have Brock Lesnar, who has deemed it appropriate to finally show up and defend his championship again. He'll defend the Universal title in a triple threat match against Braun Strowman and Kane. And I predict that Brock Lesnar will retain. Probably, I mean, look, you never know. They could put the title on Braun, which I'd be okay with, but this seems like one of the most predictable matches, if not the most predictable match on this card, with Brock winning. They're so close to WrestleMania, I can't see them taking the championship off him now before they crown the big dog in New Orleans. I just don't see that happening, so I'm picking Brock. I think, you know, I was going to say, I was thinking, does Triple H interfere? Are they setting up something with Triple H and Strowman? And now I hear rumors about The Miz, which I'll talk about when I talk about Raw in a little bit. I know this much. I believe that Kane is in there to eat the fall. And so I think Kane eats the fall. I think Brock retains the championship. And as predicted, goes on to Mania to defend against Roman Reigns. We then have the 30-man over-the-top rope Royal Rumble match. Now, on his podcast, Jerry Lawler said that he will be part of the announce team for this year's Royal Rumble, so he'll be joining, I don't know who he'll be joining. My guess, I would think it would be Michael Cole, Jerry Lawler, and Corey Graves. And they cut the other guys out, Byron and the social media guy there. So that would be my guess, but if you like the King, you'll get the King on commentary here. Here is the list of 18. Is what they've, much like the Women's Rumble, they've announced 18 so far. Roman Reigns, it was such a big announcement that he was entering the Royal Rumble on Friday that they actually sent a breaking news text message out to people. This was breaking news here that Roman Reigns entered himself into the Men's Royal Rumble match. So he'll be in there. Randy Orton, last year's winner, is in the Rumble as well. Shinsuke Nakamura, John Cena, Finn Balor, Baron Corbin, Woken, Matt Hardy, Bray Wyatt, Rusev, Elias, Aiden English, Titus O'Neil, Apollo Crews, The Miz, Ty Dillinger, Big E, Kofi Kingston, and Xavier Woods. So that's the current list of, and by the time you listen to this, there may have been more announced, but as of now, those are the names. I am really, really hoping that Roman Reigns losing the Intercontinental Championship on Monday night is not just to pave the way for him to win this Royal Rumble tonight in Philly. I cannot emphasize how big of a mistake I think that would be for them to do that. And I hope that is not the reason why they took the championship off of him. We saw EC3 last night at the NXT, or I'm sorry, EC Space 3 at the NXT show last night. So we know he's headed there. I thought he might be in the Rumble. If he doesn't answer Bobby Roode's open challenge, I think that we'll see Bobby Lashley make his return in the Royal Rumble match. Much like EC3, he's free and clear. There was some debate about whether or not his contract, he was going to have to let it run out. There was a few more months on it. But apparently they've given him his full release. Impact has been very gracious lately between patching things up with Broken Matt and giving him the rights to the Broken Universe and giving everybody the rights to retain to their respective characters, which is why WWE can call him EC3. And by the way, there's no guarantee he's going to be EC3 in NXT. Okay, just because the Chiron on the TV screen said EC Space 3 last night, and remember when Asuka was first shown on TV, they had it as Kana, which was her name in Japan. Then she debuted as Asuka. So that doesn't mean that he's going to be EC3 in NXT. We don't know that yet. But Lashley is an interesting case. He did not leave the company on the best of terms. It's been over a decade since he left WWE. There, you know, the stories of why he left and Michael Hayes' involvement and hints of racism and all this stuff. It was not a happy split between the two parties. But Lashley really became one of the more, fun people to watch, really, in TNA. He grew as a performer. I thought as a champion, he was one of their better champions, in fact. And I was still, at that point, I was still going to some of the TNA shows when they would come to New York. They would come to the Hammerstein. They would tape TV. Lashley was the champion at the time. And I was really enjoying it. So I think, you know, he's grown as a performer. He's a lot older now and a lot better than he was. I wouldn't mind seeing him back in WWE. I wouldn't mind seeing a match between him and Brock at some point. Some people call him Black Lesnar. So, you know, Brock, you know, hey, why not? I think that could be a big match, you know, down the road. So does he show up tonight in the Rumble? Does he answer the open challenge with Roode? I think it's one or the other. If not, I think he'll be in the Rumble. I also think we'll see The Undertaker make an appearance like he did last year, and something may happen with him and John Cena to set that matchup, that rumored matchup for WrestleMania, which is basically what happened last year, you know, when Roman Reigns dumped Undertaker out of the ring. And that kind of sort of led to their match. I don't know if that was the exact reason why The Undertaker, you know, went after him, but for Mania, but that's certainly was a seed that was planted that ultimately led to their match. And it was a long shot to begin with, I admit. I know. And now, after what happened last night at TakeOver, it's even more of a long... This is like a Hail Mary. I know this. But I can't turn back now. I am sticking with my prediction, which was going to be and still is, that Aleister Black not only debuts on the main roster in the Rumble match, but he will win the Men's Royal Rumble match. I promise you, I am not under the influence of any narcotics. And this is the prediction that I'm sticking with, even though... After what happened last night, I kind of want to back out of it, but I'm not going to do that. I'm going to stick with my convictions. I think it'll be the big shock win. They've never done that before where they've had somebody debut from NXT the same night and win the Rumble match. This guy is ready. Whenever they want to call him up, tonight, 6 months from now, a year from now, he's ready. You know, when they want him, when they need him, he's got that presence. He's good enough to be an impact player right now on Raw or SmackDown, and get over, I think, as a headline guy, not long after he debuts. Even more so than Nakamura, I think. He's got that potential. But I'm going with him to win the Royal Rumble and go on to compete for the WWE Championship at WrestleMania. Now, he won his match last night. I thought he was going to lose, maybe, you know, do the honors on the way out, but he won. He beat Adam Cole. And that, coupled with the fact that there is no other obvious choice for a babyface challenger for Andrade Cien Almas at that TakeOver show in New Orleans, makes me think I'm way off on this. But hey, you know what? They could always go with EC3. They want to shoot him up to the top in NXT, right to the kind of the main event picture. I mean, hell, it could be end up being EC3 and Almas for all we know in New Orleans. Doesn't necessarily have to be Black, but if it's not him, I just don't know who else it would be. But I'm sticking with him. He's my pick to win the Rumble. And look, I've got two surprise winners. I realize this for my Rumble picks here. I'm going with Black and I'm going with Rousey, neither of which have even been announced for the Rumble match. But I'm going for Broke here. I will not be upset at all if the obvious choices go over. The obvious choices, I think, are Nakamura for the men's and Asuka for the women's. And I would not be upset if they both won. But I want to think outside the box a little bit here. It'd be nice if WWE did that sometimes. That is to say, no Roman Reigns tonight, and no John Cena. Been there, done that, thank you very much. Just do something different. We know what Roman's destination is. He's going there whether you like it or not. Fine. But there are other ways to get him there without having to piss every single person off in that building tonight. There's no reason to do that. It was just a rumor, now it's a reality. If at first you don't succeed, then try again, which is what Vince McMahon is doing. The XFL is back. Only this time he is starting out with $100 million of his own money. There is no NBC money this time around, but the XFL is back. Someone alert Homer Simpson, he'll be very excited. First of all, credit to Brad Shepard, okay, at the Brad Shepard on Twitter, who broke the news back in December that Vince McMahon was looking to revive the XFL. He even gave the exact date of the announcement, January 25th, to the day. So hat tip to him. Vince hosted a media conference call on camera on Thursday to announce the news. This was a very, very odd choice, looking back, considering how vague he was with many of his answers once he opened it up to questions from the media. He didn't really know much about anything. I mean, he had some specifics here and there, but he didn't have a whole lot to say as people were trying to dig in and get more answers from him. He just gave these very vague, generic, we'll see kind of answers. Now, this time they're taking their time to get this right. 2 years, he says, we have 2 years to get it right and figure things out. But honestly, like, this really should have been a press release and not a conference call. I don't know what he was expecting from outlets like The Wall Street Journal and Bloomberg News, you know, and ESPN. He seemed just very unprepared. But in any event, these are the key takeaways from the call. Here's what we know. If you were somebody hoping that this would mean Vince might step away from his day-to-day creative duties with WWE, you're out of luck. He made it very clear that he is not going anywhere and nothing will change as far as WWE and his responsibilities there are concerned. And look, if you are one of these people, okay, who thinks that WWE would be much better off without him and want him to scale back his duties or step aside, you should be rooting for this thing to succeed. You should be sitting there right now with your XFL hat waving your XFL flag around, praying to the gods above that this thing takes off, because that's the only way I could ever see him diverting any attention away from WWE to something else. And even then, I think it's a long shot. I'm not sure he would. But if this thing really just blows up and takes off, that may be your best shot of kind of getting him away from the wrestling side a little bit and having him focus on other things. They're calling it the new XFL, kind of like the new Coke. Although once they, I would have to think that once they start, they'll just call it the XFL, but for now they're calling it the new XFL. He said they're keeping the name because he felt it had brand equity, which it does, although, you know, not necessarily good brand equity, but he says it has brand equity, and in his own words, it just sounds cool. It does sound cool. I can't argue with him on that. It does sound cool. It's a cool name. First game won't be played until 2020. Their plan is to launch with 8 teams, 40-man active rosters, and a 10-week regular season schedule. Postseason would have 2 semifinal playoff games and 1 championship game. They're not following a franchise model, which means the league itself owns all 8 teams. Players will be paid to play and paid more to win. This is according to the one sheet that they sent out after the fact. They will be paid more to win. He said he wants to speed the game up, and they are open to suggestions. For example, maybe eliminating halftime was one idea he floated, or cutting back on commercial breaks. And in my absolute favorite quote of the entire presser, which you heard at the top of the podcast, he said, "Sometimes a 3 and 3.5 hour game is laborious to watch." I don't think that you could find a worse messenger for that than Vince McMahon. The same Vince McMahon who runs a 3-hour plus show every Monday night. Now, as soon as I mentioned this, I got all the comments. "Yeah, but you know what? It was a USA decision, Solomonster. That's not Vince McMahon's decision. If it were up to Vince McMahon, Raw would be 90 minutes every single week." Oh, really? Oh, really? Like, you mean like those 6-hour pay-per-view blocks on his own network? You know, the one that USA doesn't actually have any control over? Or the 7-hour WrestleMania show we had last year? Was that a USA call too? Yes, I am well aware of the stories that it was a USA decision for Raw to go to 3 hours. You know how I know that? Because I've talked about it here on this show numerous times. That changes nothing about what I said. The optics of him calling another 3-hour TV broadcast laborious are just too rich. My point is that it was incredibly tone-deaf to have him, of all people, saying what he said. And I'm not even saying he's wrong. I'm not disagreeing with him. Football games are laborious to sit through sometimes. Baseball games are even worse. And I'm a baseball fan. I agree, they should all find ways to speed up those games. But he also should not be the person sitting there talking about fans being upset about football games being 3 hours long. Whether it's his call or not with Monday Night Raw, it doesn't make him look like any less of a hypocrite. And if, by the way, if he really thought 3 hours was that, you know, detrimental to his show, he would do something about it. I guess the money is just too great. Okay, well, whatever. But you can't tell me that in the 5 years plus that Raw's been 3 hours, they haven't burned off a good part of their audience. And we knew that was going to happen when it went. We knew that when they went to 3 hours permanently in July of 2012, long-term burnout was going to be a big issue. And I think the ratings have bore that out. They'll have their Raws. I mean, Raw last week did a huge number. Why? Why do you think that was? Because they brought back all the legends. You think Raw's going to do that number this week? I think this week Raw will do a pretty good number because you're coming off the Rumble. And if there was any time of year Raw was going to do well, it should be going into WrestleMania. But you look at the pattern over the last 5 years, you cannot deny that at the risk of whatever USA is paying them, they have chased off a good number of fans. And if Vince McMahon, the businessman, thought that long term, hey, this might not be the best idea, I would like to think he's had conversations about that with USA. Maybe he got shot down. I'm not even sure if he's had conversations with them about it. But again, the point I was making was the optics of it. It makes him look so tone deaf to have him of all people. You couldn't have somebody else do that. You know what I mean? You couldn't have somebody else say that. Like, you know, make that comment a few months from now. Why are you doing this? Well, you see, That's what I was commenting on. The optics of it. Yes, I'm aware of the stories. I do this thing called a podcast, in case you didn't know. I've talked about this before. So, one of the things he said with the XFL, as a way to speed up the game, might be to cut down on the number of commercial breaks. And that's another thing I would love for him to have a conversation with the brass over at USA Network about when it comes to his own shows. Sit down and have a very frank conversation about commercial breaks for Raw, or at least the placement of them, which is just out of control. In fact, I hope that other networks like Fox, I hope the stories are true, and I hope Fox and a bunch of other networks in the next few months express interest in bringing in WWE programming. I hope they do. When that negotiating period with NBC Universal is up at the end of the spring, if WWE has interest from multiple places, it gives them leverage. They ought to be able to address some of these problems before they sign their next deal. When I heard that, hey, if they go to Fox, they might have to cut Raw back to 2 hours if they put Raw on Fox, good. 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 I hope they do. Maybe they can scale back the length of the show. Maybe they can scale back the number of ad breaks. Maybe they can distribute them in a different way so it doesn't just constantly interrupt the show. If USA wants to keep them that badly, maybe they'd be willing to make some concessions on a new deal. But there was one Twitter troll who crawled out from under the rock he lives under long enough to call me a neckbeard. Me, of all people, of all the things to call me, he chose neckbeard. I have a neck, but no beard. Perhaps somebody can Photoshop one onto me. Vince said the quality of human being is going to be very important. It'll be a very important factor in the kind of players that they welcome into the XFL. They're not interested in anybody with a criminal record, and that includes things like DUIs. You will not be welcome to play in the XFL. Well, that would eliminate half the WWE roster, so I guess there really won't be any crossover between the two leagues. He said this will be kept entirely separate from WWE. There will not be any crossover this time like there was last time. That includes announcers. We won't have Jim Ross. We won't have Jerry Lawler. I assume we won't have Jesse Ventura. Vince himself will not be the face of the XFL. He said, in fact, this might be the last time we see him out in a public forum like this talking about this. They want to hire the best and the brightest to take the reins on this so that he doesn't have to be the one out front, which probably is for the best. He said the XFL will have nothing to do with politics or social issues. He wants to keep politics out of it, but he did say he feels strongly that players should stand for the national anthem. So there it is. If you were wondering if this was going to come up, it has already come up and he has already addressed it. There will be no kneeling allowed if Vince McMahon has a say in this in the XFL. Now, he didn't use those exact words, but he made it very clear he wanted people to stand for the anthem. He said as far as the rules for the players to follow when it comes to that sort of stuff, he said, oh, I'm sure we'll have some kind of booklet. A booklet. Like an instruction manual. Like, what are they, assembling a desk they just bought at IKEA? I guess a code of conduct, I assume is what he means, will be written into their contracts. Someone asked him if he consulted his wife Linda about any of this. He just goes, no. I just laughed the way he said it. Look, I wish him luck. I think the guy just really likes football. And he's also driven by the failure of the XFL the first time. It's been gnawing away at him ever since 2001. The fact that it, not only that it failed, and in his mind, people didn't give it a chance. If we had another one or two seasons, we could have done something with this thing. But I think it's a combination of that and him just being mercilessly mocked. And look, he was able to poke fun at himself at the time. I remember him going after, going on SNL. After it failed, he did some kind of skit where he was like auctioning off or selling XFL merchandise in like a Home Shopping Network special. So he was able to poke some fun at himself at the time, but you know it's been bothering him all these years. If you watched that 30 for 30 that they did last year on the XFL, he said as much. When Dick Ebersol asked him, do you ever think about bringing back the XFL? He didn't hesitate. He says, yes. And he has said since then that this is not something that came up, you know, with the whole controversy over kneeling and the anthem. He's had this idea for years. Of course he has, because it's the one thing that, you know, he hasn't been able to get right. And now here he has a chance with his own money to try again and try to get it right this time. And He perceives it that he got an unfair shake the first time. He doesn't think he was given enough time to make it work. It's almost like he's trying to right a wrong. And he's pumping $100 million of his own money into this thing to do it. The fact remains, he has never had any real success outside of what he does best, which is pro wrestling. And you can complain about WWE today with him in charge. He's old, he's out of touch, and he should step down, and Triple H should be booking, and blah, 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 and all this stuff. But the fact is, the company still makes money hand over fist with him in the CEO role. WWE is this gigantic global brand, right? The machine just keeps strumming along. Outside of that, he's fallen flat on his face. There was the closed-circuit TV deal back in the 70s with Evel Knievel. Evel Knievel was going on a big jump, and he, you know, did this whole broadcast and pumped so much money into it, and that failed. And that led, at least in part, that led to him and Linda filing for personal bankruptcy. I mean, not paying their taxes for 5 years had a little bit more to do with that, but the Evel Knievel thing played a role. The World Bodybuilding Federation, that was a failure. XFL Part 1, that was a failure. The WWF restaurant in Times Square, which I liked. I went there a few times. I thought the food was good. But that failed. That's not a great track record. That's why I think it's smart for him to say that he won't be the public face of this. And that he plans to bring in people who are more experienced, who can take the reins on this and run things and be the public face of it. But the odds are against him. I hope for his sake it's not 2 years worth of work and preparation for something that may fizzle out after 6 months. I mean, it's not easy starting up a new league. It really isn't. Look, I don't think I've ever talked about this before, but I helped out a little bit on the promotion end for a new minor league football league a few years ago. Ironically, that was called the FXFL. That was the name of it. It was called the Fall Experimental Football League. We had a team here in Brooklyn called the Brooklyn Bolts that played at the minor league baseball stadium out in Coney Island, which has hosted a whole bunch of TNA and ROH shows over the years. They turned it into a football field, and there were a handful of Brooklyn Bolts games there at the stadium. They were trying to bring football to Brooklyn and the whole league. I mean, there were only about four or five teams. The Bolts, I know the Boston Brawlers were another one. I forget the other names, but the goal, the ultimate goal, was to become a farm system, basically, for the NFL. They weren't trying to compete. Obviously, they weren't competing with the NFL. It was such a tiny, you know, minor league league, but they were hoping to forge some kind of partnership with them or be like a breeding ground or a testing ground for new rules that they could implement and train referees and not just players, like all that stuff. That's really the role that they envisioned. They wanted to partner with the NFL. The NFL, of course, wasn't interested. And after two seasons and losing a shitload of money, the FXFL was no more. You need money. You need TV. And to be honest, they need somebody like a Tim Tebow. Okay, they would be crazy not to go after him if he's available. They want eyeballs on this product right out of the gate. That first XFL game all those years ago did monster numbers. Okay, so you know that first game in 2020... However the league ends up doing, that first game, if they promote the hell out of it, is going to do a big number for curiosity, if nothing else. You're going to get a lot of eyeballs on that game. You get a Tebow or a name that somebody will recognize, I don't care if they're a great player or not, it doesn't matter. I'll tell you right now, you know, people will watch. They have Tebow right now with the Mets. The guy's playing baseball. He hits a home run in his very first at-bat in the minor leagues, and people go nuts. They start talking about him like he was the second coming of Babe Ruth or something. It was comical. But you know what? I can tell you for a fact that whenever Tebow would play in the minors, whatever stadium they went to, it was almost always packed. Their crowds were much bigger than they normally would be without him there. That is a fact. And I see, you know, the Mets just invited him up to spring training. So who knows? He may, in 2 years, he may be playing for the Mets. He may be in the outfield or playing second base or something. At this, especially, you know, the way things are going with the Mets. But a year from now, who knows if he'll be in baseball, what he'll be doing. But the XFL needs a name or two, I think, like that to generate some buzz. And if people like what they see, they might just stick around. That's what you want them to do. They could tune in for curiosity. You want them to stick around. Just one day after being suspended by WWE, Enzo Amore, the now former cruiserweight champion, was released by WWE. This after a woman went on Twitter accusing him of rape And then later finding out that he's been under investigation by the police going back all the way to October. And he never said anything to WWE about it. This was their statement. This was all they said. WWE has come to terms on the release of Eric Arndt. And then they put Enzo Amore in parentheses. That's it. That's all they said. A very matter-of-fact statement. They didn't even wish him well in his future endeavors. If this guy had a dime for every time he told the company he worked for that he was under investigation for a felony, he would have zero dimes. And therein lies the real reason why he now finds himself unemployed. The timing of this coming out could not have been worse for him, coming the same week as Raw 25 and the Royal Rumble and Vince McMahon's big XFL announcement. They're getting all this positive press, all this media attention, and they get blindsided by the news that one of their performers is accused of being a rapist. Yeah, I wouldn't think WWE would be very happy about that. It all started with a tweet from a Snapchat model named Filomena. And this is what she said. She said, okay, it's been long enough and I've been so scared to share this. I was raped in mid-October by the WWE Enzo Amore, also known as Eric Arden. So she misspelled his last name. Taylor Grosso and Too Poor, who I guess that's the stage name, I guess, for Grosso's girlfriend. They let it happen as accomplices. I was in a mental hospital for 45 days after it. They are not good people. And that's how this whole thing started. Now, the incident is alleged to have taken place October 19th at a hotel and spa in Phoenix. Enzo, he was either the champion at the time, or this was right before he won the Cruiserweight title. So it was right around that period. Enzo was in town that night. He was at a Red Hot Chili Peppers concert. She claims that Grosso and his girlfriend got her all fucked up and then left her alone with Enzo, knowing full well what was about to happen. There was cocaine everywhere in the hotel room, because what would a party be without cocaine? All sorts of drugs. She told Sean Ross Sapp of Fightful.com, and by the way, hat tip to Sean, nobody's had better coverage of this whole story than he has. She was so messed up, she can remember sitting on the couch, frozen. She couldn't move, she couldn't speak, but she could hear. She could hear what the rest of them in the room were saying, and she claims that she heard Enzo say to Grosso's girlfriend, "Thanks for bringing this girl around. This is the type of girl I've been waiting for. That I can just destroy. She's just such a lightweight. She doesn't even know what's going on. I'm going to rape the shit out of her." Who talks like that, by the way, and announces that they're about to rape somebody? Does that not sound odd to people? Anyway, they all leave, according to her. Enzo starts coming on to her. She says to him, "I want to get to know you first." And he allegedly replied, "Bitch, I have a million followers on Instagram. You should be begging for my little Enzo." My words, not his. She told TMZ that she told him no countless times and asked him to stop. He not only raped her, but beat her, according to her, and that he laughed about it the next morning. She says she suffers from PTSD as a result of what happened. She did go to the doctor a few days later. She had a rape kit done. The cops were notified about a sexual assault. They're still waiting on certain test results to come back. So it's not as though this is just kind of being fabricated out of nowhere. She went to the cops days later, and this investigation is very real. This investigation has been ongoing since October. I would think that if they thought there was absolutely nothing to this, that this investigation would have been long over, but it's still going on. There has been a lot of doubt cast by different people about her story, including by one of her own friends, somebody who, this guy Sam Cook, who claims to have been one of her closest friends. He posted a video on YouTube, called her batshit crazy, claimed that he even helped her produce another YouTube video once, where she admitted to faking a pregnancy after one of her ex-boyfriends broke up with her. And Cook showed the text messages that he claims were from her the morning after the alleged incident, where she admits to having done coke and that she was in bed with a famous pro wrestler, bragging that she had just had sex with him. There was no mention of rape at all in any of the texts. He said at the time she was living with a sobriety group, the victim was, and the night that this all took place, she was hiding from them so that she could go do drugs. And she was very worried that if the group found out, her dad would find out, and that could be a problem, because apparently he was supporting her, he was paying for her car, and God knows what else. And so what he alleges happened is that she told her dad that she was raped. which is why she did the drugs. And at that point, she went to the police station to file a police report, get tested. Now, her response was to claim that those texts were taken out of context. And then she linked to a YouTube video where Cook, the Sam Cook guy, was talking about how upset he was that he was going bald, basically just to embarrass this guy. Eventually, she took down the post. She's also admitted to being on numerous medications since the age of 14 for depression, for bipolar, borderline personality disorder. This whole thing is just a mess. So Enzo's attorney, there's been no statement from Enzo other than the one put out by his attorney, which really didn't say a whole lot of anything. They're basically denying this, but they didn't really have a lot to say. They claim they're cooperating with the authorities. Enzo was fully aware that there was an ongoing investigation into what happened. He failed to tell anybody in WWE about it. So they had no idea what was coming when this suddenly turned into such a big story. They got caught flat-footed. And for a guy who already didn't have the greatest reputation behind the scenes, this was the straw that broke the camel's back. There was talk about him, maybe he violated the morals clause in his contract. I don't think he was fired for violating a morals clause. He was fired for failing to clue them in, but it's possible if they were ever forced to argue why they terminated him in a court of law, they could cite a morals clause that is found in all WWE talent contracts. And you can read it as right on the company's corporate website. It reads as follows. It says WWE's ability to fine, suspend, or terminate a WWE talent will not be, however, limited or compromised in any manner in the event incontrovertible evidence of such illegal misconduct is presented to WWE. Section 9.13A of the WWE booking contract, commonly known as the, quote, morals clause, provides WWE with broad discretion and authority to act under such circumstances. So apparently that clause is in every single talent contract. And the whole idea, you know, morals clauses, they're nothing new. I was kind of curious how far back they go, to be honest with you, because we've heard about them a lot recently with different celebrities. And I was curious how far back they go. The big case that really triggered their usage, especially in Hollywood, involved a famous silent film actor named Fatty Arbuckle. And he was accused of raping and accidentally killing a woman at a party. There were three different trials. The first two, the jury was deadlocked, and then finally the jury in the third one found him not guilty. They even wrote a letter of apology to him because they thought it was an injustice that this guy's life was ruined by what they said were just false allegations. It's actually a really fascinating case if you ever want to take a few minutes to read up on it. Anyway, after this, Universal Studios started including morals clauses in the contracts for all of its talent. I mentioned some of the more recent PR disasters. I'm sure a lot of you remember a couple years back, there was a big story involving Ryan Lochte, who lied to the authorities in Brazil during the Summer Olympics, claiming he was robbed at gunpoint. Remember that? When in reality, there was no robbery. He was drunk. He was being stupid. He destroyed a gas station bathroom and vandalized it and pissed on the wall and all this other stuff. And there were at least four different sponsors who dumped him because of it, probably because they all had morals clauses in their contracts that he violated, and that gave them the out that they needed to go ahead and cut ties with the guy. That could be WWE's out, if need be. Like, you know, if Enzo decided to sue them for wrongful termination, which I don't see happening. I mean, suing WWE does not sound like something that would be a whole lot of fun for him, probably wouldn't end well for him. And I don't think he would have a leg to stand on if the firing had nothing to do with the charges themselves. WWE is well within its rights to do what they did. If I were WWE, I would have fired him too. The fact is, though, the man is innocent until proven guilty. That's not the way things work in the court of public opinion, but in the court of law, you're supposed to be innocent until proven guilty. If Enzo did it, then he should be prosecuted, okay? That's it. I mean, if he did this, if they find evidence that he did this, if he lied, oh yeah, and he raped her, he assaulted her, he should go to jail. But if the woman is making this up and they find that she lied about being raped for whatever reason, she was on her meds, she was worried her dad was going to be mad at her, whatever her rationale for it is, if she lied and made this up, then she needs to be prosecuted to the fullest extent that the law will allow for. Period. Full stop. End of story. I don't care if she was on medication. I don't care if she was off medication. I don't care if she's depressed. I don't care if she's bipolar. Those are awful things. I hope she gets the help she needs, but you cannot get away with making an accusation like that against somebody and ruining their life. You cannot do that. What she has accused him of is one of the worst things that you could accuse another human being of doing. The only other thing I could think of worse would be calling somebody a child molester, okay? You call somebody that or you cry rape, and let me tell you something, it's hard for that person to ever shake that. We've seen stories of this before. Now, my own opinion, every time this woman opens her mouth, she becomes less credible and less credible. I don't know who, if anybody, is advising her, but she needs to shut up at this point and just let the investigation play out because she's not doing herself any favors. And in the absence of any hard evidence, I don't see this going anywhere. I think the waters are so muddied on this, no sane jury would possibly convict this guy, just going based off what we've heard so far. And the investigation is still ongoing, so there may be more that comes out. That could be damning for Enzo Amore. If he did it, then let him rot. But if not, this woman needs to be held accountable. She needs to go to jail. As for the future of 205 Live, Daniel Bryan has announced that a new general manager will be named this Tuesday. My first thought was probably like many of yours, that could be the perfect role for Rockstar Spud, who is due to start on TV any week now. I suppose they could always throw us a curveball and have Paige, right, be the new GM, but I'll go with Spud. I mean, we've seen him sort of play that role already in TNA. I think he'd be good at it. Whoever it ends up being, that person will then be tasked with addressing the Cruiserweight Championship situation. I guess it's just all too much for Kurt Angle to handle anymore, being basically the de facto GM for two different brands. And so they felt the need that 205 Live needed its own GM. The charges against Rich Swann, by the way, on the subject of the Cruiserweights here, were dropped this past week. Prosecutors felt there was insufficient evidence to move forward with a case. He was charged with false imprisonment / kidnapping and battery stemming from an incident with his wife back on December 10th. Triple H and Stephanie had just said recently that they were waiting to see what happens and that if they moved ahead with charges, he would be terminated immediately. With the charges being dropped, he should be reinstated, but WWE has not made any sort of public comment about this. So as of right now, as far as anybody knows, Rich Swann is still suspended. I suspect that will change very soon, though. By the way, I did watch the main event from this week's 205 Live. It was Cedric Alexander against Mustafa Ali, and it was a damn good match. I had a bunch of you say, oh, you got to watch the match this week. It's really good. Watch it, watch it. So I did, and you were right. Really, really good stuff. I think it's worth going out of your way to see. Not as good as anything on that TakeOver show last night, but still really good. That lumbar check, let me tell you, man, it's such a great move, and really, it's the person taking it who makes it look as good as they do. It's how they sell it. Ali's got a great finish, too, with that inverted 450. I've commented on that before. I said that might be one of my favorite finishes in all of wrestling, in fact. But these two have the kind of match I think they need to do more of. It was a Cruiserweight Classic worthy match. If they use this moment in time, in light of the Enzo stuff and they're installing a new GM, if they use this as an opportunity to sort of hit the restart button on this thing, they still have a chance to turn this into something closer to what it should have been when it first started. I do think that they have to stop taping it after SmackDown and do these shows in a place like Full Sail. I still believe that. I just think it would work so much better in a more intimate venue like that. But it's obvious 205 Live is not going anywhere, and if they're going to continue on with this, use this as an opportunity to hit that reset button and do it the way that people were hoping and expecting them to do in the first place. And now you can't say they don't have the talent for it, given who they already have on the main roster, who's waiting in the wings now, right, in the Performance Center. They could make this thing special if they really want to. Raw from this past Monday night, I posted a full review of Raw's 25th anniversary show. It's up on the YouTube channel. It went up the day after, and I want to thank everybody who's taken the time to head over there and watch it. It's got over 66,000 views and counting, which is more than some pay-per-views do. It beat the hell out of Clash of Champions, I can tell you that much. It included, by the way, a live report. I had Noah Mark call in for about 10 minutes. He was on location at the Manhattan Center, so it was very interesting hearing from the perspective of somebody who was there why people were so upset. So go over there and check out the full review. I know a lot of you had problems, unfortunately, with the upload. I don't know what happened. This has never happened before. Hopefully it never happens again. But a lot of you were complaining that you couldn't get it to play, or I sounded like, you know, like Alvin from the Chipmunks. My voice was sped up so much, and it was not buffering. It was buffering for people. Look, the one thing, and I had to repeat this over and over again. I don't know how many times I could say this. I'll say it again. On all of those videos, if you ever have problems, you can always get the audio from the MP3 link in the description. I put it there for a reason. This is one of those reasons. So I want people to tell me, you know, if the video doesn't work. Like, for example, tonight, you know, I'm going to be reviewing the Rumble. As soon as the show is over, I'll record a review, get it up on YouTube. And if you have issues, by all means, let me know. But there were people saying, I can't listen to it. Is there another way? Please re-upload the video. There's always an MP3 link in the video description. Always. So if you ever have any issues, you can always grab it that way as a fail-safe. Please just be aware of that. But for a lot of other people, it worked. So I have no idea what happened. It's probably YouTube. YouTube fucks everything up. But the Twitter poll, I wanted to just go through some final thoughts on this here. We had just shy of 5,000 votes. By far the most amount of votes for a Raw poll that I've ever done. I've had 5,000 or 6,000 votes in like pay-per-view polls, like for WrestleManias and stuff like that, but never quite a response like that for a Monday Night Raw. 32% thumbs up, 68% thumbs down. This should have been a slam dunk show, and they somehow botched it up. And I said in my YouTube review, when you strip away all the nostalgia from last Monday, this really wasn't a very good show at all. Certainly not one that would get you excited for the Royal Rumble tonight. Like, you were either already excited for the Rumble, or you weren't. But I don't see how this show could have made a difference one way or the other. So that's another reason why this show failed. Almost 5 million viewers for that first hour of Raw. 4.5 million average for all 3 hours, but almost 5 million for that first hour of the show. And what that tells me is that those lapsed fans are clearly still lurking. They're still there. They haven't completely vanished yet, like the WCW fans did when WCW went under. They disappeared pretty quickly. They never came back. Okay, a lot of those old hardcore diehard NWA / WCW fans, once they were gone, they were gone. That was it. But these fans from the Attitude Era, from the Ruthless Aggression Era, those people that used to be there and really aren't anymore, they're still on the periphery. They're still hanging around. But imagine thinking that that show last Monday did anything at all to make them want to stick around. It was a great advertisement for all the classic content on the network, but a terrible advertisement for the Royal Rumble and the current product. And as far as the Manhattan Center debacle goes, they got greedy. Plain and simple. I was talking to Noah about this. They got greedy. They should have just done the show from the Manhattan Center as a throwback for one night only. I know it fits fewer people. They may not make as much money off it. They already jacked up the ticket prices. They could have jacked it up some more if that was the only location. Believe me, people would have paid. They would have paid through the nose. There were people who paid through the nose. $1,000 or more for tickets to go to the Manhattan Center and sit and watch two matches and a screen for the entire show. Imagine going to like a closed circuit location for one of those WrestleManias back in the day that they had all over the country and paying $1,000 to sit in a big theater and watch Hulk Hogan against Andre the Giant on a big screen. It's insane. They should have just run the Manhattan Center. I'm not going to rehash the whole show all over again, but I will say this. They had the Usos and they had the New Day. They were on the show. And all they did was stand around in a backstage comedy skit with the APA while Big E rubbed pancakes all over his face because he's psychotic. You mean to tell me they couldn't have those guys work a hot match for the tag team titles at the Manhattan Center? They had to be at Barclay. I think it was Barclay's backstage just standing around. That really was the role that you came up with for those guys. It was all hands on deck, Raw and SmackDown guys at the show. That's what you come up with for them. You have two brands, all hands on deck. They were running two venues, and that's how you make use of your talent? That's just poor planning, plain and simple. Poor planning. Now, the big one of the big stories coming out of the show, or the biggest thing to happen on the show, was The Miz beating Roman Reigns to win back the Intercontinental Championship for an eighth time. I think he's only one away now from tying Chris Jericho for all-time IC title wins. And there's a rumor, and I believe this comes from The Observer this week, that we now have a clearer picture of what Braun Strowman might be doing at WrestleMania. And it's not competing for or defending the Universal Championship, but it is challenging The Miz for the Intercontinental Championship. Now, we'll know if it's bullshit or not if he goes and wins the title tonight, but that is the rumor, that his opponent at WrestleMania will be The Miz, and he will be challenging for the IC title. It's going to be one of the bigger matches on the show. That's why they had Miz. All things considered, I mean, he beat Roman. He didn't beat Roman clean. We can't say that, because the Miztourage was getting involved, and Miz, you know, ripped one of the turnbuckle pads off. But he pinned him. He pinned him right in the middle of the ring with his move. And apparently they want to keep Miz strong, so that I assume Strowman can beat him. I mean, look, you can make the argument, as I have, that they should put the Universal title on Strowman right now. If they don't, and instead he challenges for the Intercontinental Championship, and he still doesn't win, I just don't know what to say. So this should be a slam dunk gimme here that he's going to win the championship. And that's why I actually like this idea. I think that he should be higher up on the card going into Mania, but you know what? I'm not going to shit on this idea. I actually like the idea because it does a few things. Number one, it puts Miz in a higher profile match at Mania, which I think is good. I think his work lately, you know, he's worthy of having a higher profile match at WrestleMania, so I'm happy for him if it's true. And also, it puts the Intercontinental Championship in the spotlight. How many years going back, okay? It's going back all those years, we had this stretch of 7 or 8 straight WrestleManias, something insane like that, where there wasn't one single defense of the Intercontinental title. That is just absolutely ridiculous. So here we are now with the potential for there to be not only an IC title match at WrestleMania, but a pretty big one too. It puts the championship in the spotlight. So all the people who were pissed off back then about that should be happy that the Intercontinental title is going to be featured in such a prominent way here on this show. I guess you could say, well, it would have been if they would have just kept the belt on Roman. You could have done champion against champion. I didn't like that idea because there's no need for him to have that championship. This is exactly why. Now you can get 2 matches out of it, and it gives The Miz something to do. Roman doesn't need that belt. You don't need both belts in the main event. Now you can get a separate championship match out of it that gives Strowman something to do. It gives Miz a prominent role on the show. And we'll see between now and then how they build it up. I mean, you know, the idea that Strowman is somehow going to be, you know, having problems beating The Miz or intimidated by The Miz. I mean, it's kind of a mismatch, but let's see what happens. Let's see, maybe they'll plant the seed somehow tonight at the Rumble. You know, how they get there. I'm more interested to see how they get to that as a championship match. But if Strowman's not going to have the Universal title, then putting the IC title on him isn't a terrible idea. He's one of the biggest names they have in the entire company. Wasn't that supposed to be the idea with Roman? Biggest name. He'll make the IC title mean something. I think The Miz did a pretty good job of doing that personally. I don't know that he gets enough credit. And actually, it's funny, when I interviewed him a couple of years back at one of those 2K events, he kind of went on a rant. I mean, it just kind of came out of nowhere. He was kind of in character for it, but I don't doubt there was some real, you know, some real feelings there. He responded to something I said and said, you know, basically he doesn't get enough credit for making the Intercontinental title mean something again. And, you know, it hasn't meant this much since the days of Mr. Perfect and Bret Hart. So like, he feels really passionately about that. And I think he deserves some credit for that, but it puts the title in the spotlight. It gives both guys something to do. I don't really see that as being a bad thing. So if that's the plan for Mania, I know it almost seems kind of beneath Braun what he's been doing lately, but I don't think that's a bad idea. I actually like it. After his loss to Bray Wyatt on Raw Monday night, Matt Hardy tweeted out the following. I've had a very prolific premonition. Woken Warriors. Following my setback in the Great War at Raw 25, I've been mandated by the 7 deities to return to and focus on my broken beginnings. My magic is most potent at the Hardy compound. So the loss on Monday may be setting up Broken Matt to replace Woken Matt. Not to be confused with Token Matt, who lost his job as a toll booth clerk thanks to Easy Pass. Or Jokin' Matt, who couldn't hack it as a stand-up comic. Seemingly like me. We had one lady on YouTube who was very upset in my Raw review that I posted. I guess she was one of the people who actually could hear it. And she was very upset that I didn't mention the segment with the ladies, where they all came out and waved, you know, that little two-minute segment. She was very upset about this. And went off on me, and I guess I'm a horrible person because I forgot to mention the women in my review. But since she was upset, I can talk about it here, even though I gave it about as much attention in my review as WWE gave them, right? WWE put them out there for 2 minutes. They didn't seem to give a shit. Why should I? But I'll give them some attention here. They introduced Nikki Bella and Brie Bella on stage. They introduced Maryse. They introduced Kelly Kelly, who doesn't look like she's aged a day since she first started. And she was like, what, 19 when she started? Jacqueline was there. Terry Runnels was there. So we had PMS in the house. Maria Kanellis was there. Tori Wilson. Michelle McCool. Trish Stratus. Got a big pop. They introduced them as some of the greatest female stars in WWE history. So yes, apparently Michelle McCool is one of the greatest stars in WWE history. I don't know how she got lumped into that category. Well, actually, I guess I do know how. But I have to say, though, about Tori Wilson, Tori looks absolutely stunning. When she walked out there, my jaw dropped. I was like, she may somehow look better now than she did back then. I just think she looks incredible. I had to mention that. I also forgot to mention the backstage segment with Mark Henry and the Godfather. They had a little run-in backstage, right? Both former members of the Nation. Godfather was with what else? A beautiful woman. Mark Henry started to come on to her thinking that she was one of Godfather's ladies of the night. When Godfather informed him all of a sudden that, hey, she's my wife. Yes, the Godfather is now a married man. I mean, he's been a married man for a while now, but never on WWE television. So the Ho train has made its final stop. A nice ending for the Godfather character. That's long-term storytelling there. They wrapped that up very nicely. I had to go to the mechanic a few weeks ago for an oil change. And he and I were talking. He's a gigantic wrestling fan. I had no idea he was this big of a fan. Guy's got to be 60s. Got to be in his like early 60s probably. Telling me stories about how he used to go to Madison Square Garden for the show. But he follows it now too. Like, I was amazed by his knowledge. Anyway, he was doing the deal where he asks me like, hey, do you remember these names? And he's like rattling off wrestler names. And I'm just standing there like, dude, do you even know who you're talking to here? And he mentions the Godfather. And he says, do you know the Godfather runs his own strip club out in Vegas? And I said, yeah, he runs the Cheetahs Club out there. Not that I would know that. I mean, I read about that. But I said, yeah, I think he manages. I don't think he owns it. I think he manages the club. He says, yeah, but do you know who works for him? I said, no. He said, D'Lo Brown. I had no idea. I looked it up. Apparently, it's true. D'Lo working with the Godfather at a strip club out in Vegas. The Nation of Domination turned out to be more for life than the NWO. So anyway, that's my thoughts on Raw 25. You want the full review, the full rant, you can go. It's up on YouTube right now. Just very quickly, SmackDown from Tuesday. I just wanted to talk about this, some quick notes. A few things I liked. One was the match between Chad Gable and Jey Uso. I thought they had a fun little match. Didn't go very long, but it was fun while it lasted. It was nice to see Gable win with the Chaos Theory. I just think it's a great move. And him being a smaller guy, when he hits it on guys who are bigger than him, and Jey Uso's not really that much bigger than him, but I'll never forget him hitting that move on Baron Corbin in NXT. They had that great Dusty Classic tag match. It was, I think, Corbin and Rhino against American Alpha. And the two things I remember from that match were the Chaos Theory, the rolling German that Gable gave to Corbin being much bigger than he is, And the finish, which I thought was masterfully done, where Gable came off the ropes and was doing this little tilt-a-whirl thing, and it was like a tilt-a-whirl right into an End of Days. It was just such a picture-perfect finish that I think at some point, if Gable were to go babyface and break off as a single, him and Corbin, hey, it was only one match. They had good chemistry in that one match. I wouldn't mind seeing how they do in a singles feud on the main roster at some point. But it's about time, I think, that we start seeing more of Gable in these singles matches. You don't have to break up their team, but like him and Benjamin here and there could have singles matches. I want to see more of this. I want to see Gable have more matches like this. And congrats to him, by the way. He is now the proud papa of a new baby girl, born on Wednesday. Her name is Meadow Ann. She's the newest member of the Gable clan. After I just got done talking about this last this last week, we had Shinsuke Nakamura on the show doing a quick promo backstage without his mouth guard in. Hallelujah! Hallelujah! His match with Corbin went to a DQ. He was setting up for the Kinshasa. Randy Orton dropped him with an RKO out of nowhere. I thought that was cool. I liked that. He also dropped Corbin with one for the hell of it. And AJ Styles wrestled Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn in separate back-to-back singles matches just 5 days before their handicap match at the Rumble. Owens is still, like I said earlier, he's still dealing with an injury. He didn't do much of anything here. The match only went about a minute. AJ tapped him out in the calf crusher. He was selling his knee. He just tapped right away. Owens was. Self-preservation for the Royal Rumble is what one of the announcers said. AJ just wouldn't let go, so he was doing damage to the knee. Finally, Zayn came in. They started the next match. All the while, you have all the referees tending to Owens outside the ring. And AJ, on occasion, when he would go outside just to be a dick, he would kick him in the knee, he would go after Owens, even though Owens was just minding his own business, laying there on the outside. They put Owens on a stretcher at one point. AJ overturned the stretcher. He came off like a total dick here, I have to say. And he paid the price for it, too, because as soon as he got back into the ring, Zayn nailed him with a Huluva kick and the Blue Thunder Bomb for the 1-2-3. Yes, for the first time, I believe, ever. At least in WWE, Sami Zayn won a match with the Blue Thunder Bomb. Left is right, up is down, cats and dogs are fucking in the streets. I love that combination much better as a finish, using the Huluva kick as the setup to the Blue Thunder Bomb as the finish. That's how it should be. I caught the Mixed Match Challenge again, week two, on Facebook Watch. The stream this week topped out at 90,000 live viewers. Last week it was about 130,000. It was Miz and Asuka, Mizka, against Big E and Carmella. Before the match, Carmella and Big E ate pancakes together, while Miz spoke in Japanese, and Asuka said something in English. And by the way, Big E has gone out of his way to be really complimentary of Carmella in recent days on social media. Like, normally on there, he's all wacky and jokey, but he posted a picture of her on Instagram, and he said, "I couldn't ask for a better partner. The last month with her has been so much fun. My only regret is that it took me this long to fully realize how funny, creative, and gifted she is." I mean, if you didn't know who these people were, and you just closed your eyes and read that out loud, you would think he said all of that while down on one knee, proposing to her with a giant pancake and a ring in the middle of it. It's like one of those teen movies where the guy has that one female friend that he doesn't realize he really loves her, even though he's going out with this other girl. And then at the very end of the movie, it's like, "Oh my God, she's been under my nose this whole time. What a fool." And then they embrace and they kiss and the fireworks go off. Not that I would watch that shit, but, you know. She is newly single. Looks like Big E is making his move before anybody else can, so hey, good for him. Match was a lot of comedy. Asuka won it for her team with the armbar on Carmella. They now move on to face Finn Balor and Sasha Banks in week 7 of the tournament. Meanwhile, this Tuesday is Beauty and the Beast, Braun Strowman and Alexa Bliss. Braun is the Beast, by the way. I don't want people to be confused there. Alexa is the Beauty, Braun is the Beast. They're going up against Sami Zayn and Becky Lynch. Last week, I mentioned a report from PW Insider about how Coliseum Home Videos could soon be making their way to the WWE Network. Well, this week, we got confirmation. According to WWENetworkNews.com, a substantial number of Coliseum home videos will be hitting the network on Monday, February 5th. That's the day after the Super Bowl. The belief is that it's going to be about 40 videos or so that get uploaded. I assume those will be in sequential order. It didn't say that. I'm just assuming that now. Which, if that's the case, that means we're looking obviously at the earliest ones that they did. Now, I found a list of all the Coliseum videos ever made, all cataloged by number. And so if it is the first 40 or so in a row that they're going to be uploading, this batch includes the first two Hulkamania videos, because they did like seven of those, I think, right? Hulkamania 1, 2, 3, just a whole collection of his different matches. So that would include the first two Hulkamania videos, the first 11 or so Best of the WWF videos that were made, the big event, which was the big stadium show from 86 that had Hogan and Paul Orndorff in the main event. Although I think that that may already be on the network. I'm pretty sure that may already be on the network, but that was one of the early Coliseum videos that got put out. There's also a video dedicated to the Macho Man and Miss Elizabeth, a video dedicated to the Hart Foundation and their matches, so there's some good stuff in there. If that's what they're putting up, there's some good stuff in there. Me, I care less about that and more about those videos from the late 80s, early 90s period. It doesn't look like we're going to get those if this is going to be done in sequential order, which kind of sucks. But this is great news if you're like me and you've been waiting for them to create a section on the network for these videos. My guess is that Thunder and Sunday Night Heat would then follow, probably after that. I know those have been in the can for a while now, but I want them to start uploading those old Superstars and Wrestling Challenge episodes after that. That's the other thing I've been waiting for. Like, the Coliseum video stuff is one, but I want them to start uploading in order those old episodes of Superstars and Challenge and get going on. I'm sure it's on their list, but I care more about that than friggin' WCW Thunder, which I could care less about. Or I should say, I could not care less. I hate when people do that. I could not. There we go. See, that's the way to... CM Punk did those videos back in the day. Remember, like, the difference between there and there and how you spell it? These, like, grammar videos. I used to love those because stuff like that drives me nuts. People would yell at me. I used to do this more often. I would be, like, running down a match card. And I'd be like, this guy versus this guy. And there was one guy who was so upset he emailed me. He goes, I can't stand it anymore. It's not verse, it's versus. And I'm like, calm down. Take your pill. What the hell, dude? And like, so now, like, consciously, I try to make sure I don't do that. So I hear people say, I could care less. It's like, oh, really? Okay, so you could care less. It's like, no, that's not what I meant. I could not care less. There you go. So anyway, this is good news. That's the point. This is great news if you've been waiting on those videos. You only have to wait a few more weeks. The trailer is out for the Bill Simmons documentary on Andre the Giant. I saw the trailer. It looks amazing. I can't wait to see it. Mark down your calendar. It premieres Tuesday, April 10th at 10 p.m. on HBO. I believe that's the Tuesday after WrestleMania, in fact. Includes interviews with Vince McMahon, Jerry Lawler, Gene Okerlund, Hulk Hogan, Billy Crystal, and Carrie Elwes are interviewed as well. They worked with Andre on The Princess Bride. So it clearly was filmed in cooperation with WWE, which is why they're able to use all that footage. So, yeah, you talk to some people, you read stories over the years. There's a good side of Andre, there's the not-so-good side of Andre. How much of that side is going to get covered? I don't know. Because again, it was done in cooperation with WWE. But Andre is the perfect subject, I think, for something like this. Just a completely fascinating guy who led a fascinating life. And there's so many stories that I'm sure a lot of which are exaggerated, but just so many stories about him and people who knew him. And just based on the trailer, it looks like they're doing this right. So really looking forward to seeing that.
I'm actually not wearing pants, and that's how I watch NXT every single week.
Last night was NXT TakeOver Philadelphia. It was not the greatest top-to-bottom TakeOver show that I've ever seen, but it did have the greatest match in NXT history. So this show cannot be anything other than a thumbs up. At last check, the Twitter poll I posted had over 3,300 votes and counting. So this is already, if it isn't already, it's shaping up to be the biggest poll I've ever done for an NXT show. 96% thumbs up, just 4% thumbs down. If you thought that was a thumbs down show, after those last two matches, you need to find a new hobby. I'm sorry, but this wrestling thing just isn't for you. Nigel McGuinness was out sick, so we got more of Percy Watson than usual, which I was dreading, but he was fine. He never really says anything, but he did his job. I actually thought they should have had Samoa Joe on the show in Nigel's place as the color guy. They had Joe on as the analyst on the pre-show, and he was really good. He was actually really good in the role. I think he would have done well. I know I'm actually advocating for a three-man booth. They gave us a two-man booth, but I do. I think Joe would have done a fine job if you took Nigel's spot for one night. Morrow had one funny line during one of the matches. I can't remember which one, where he said, "As ill-advised as a laundry pod challenge." I don't really understand all this stuff that's going on lately with these Tide Pods I keep hearing about. Other than apparently people are eating them. There's an awful lot of stupid people in this world. Stupidity is more contagious than the flu. Thankfully, I was vaccinated from it at a young age. Throughout the night, they showed the newest recruits to NXT in the front row, which included War Machine, going by that name, Trevor Ricochet Man, which is how they identified him. Ricochet Man actually sounds like a damn cool name, I have to say. Makes me think of the Rocketeer. There's an old movie reference for you. And the biggest name, arguably, was EC3. And they actually identified him as EC3. Although they put a space between the EC and the 3 in the lower third on the screen, which was kind of weird. But there it is. Welcome to NXT. Ethan Cambridge III. Remember last week I said they don't have to call him Ethan Carter. He could be Ethan Cambridge. He can be Ethan Cartwright. So in NXT, look, I'm confident the guy's going to do just fine. On the main roster, not so much. But you can say that really about anybody. So him going to NXT first, Probably is the best thing for him. Even though he could be on Raw or SmackDown tomorrow. If they're going to send him to NXT, I mean, who am I to argue? The one thing you can't say is that NXT is not stockpiled with talent right now. And I said this a few weeks ago. I laugh at the people who say, man, NXT is so much worse than it used to be. And as though NXT back then didn't have people that they plucked off the indies. You know, when people think back to like the days of Tyson Kidd and Adrian Neville and people like that. Like, a lot of those guys also came from the indies. I mean, you had guys like Bo Dallas and Tyler Breeze who weren't as identified as indie guys, even though I think Breeze probably worked indies up in Canada and stuff. But, and so that's true. And I do miss, there are parts of that old NXT period back then when you had them and Zayn and, you know, one of my favorite takeover main events was that four-way, I want to say back in 2015, might have been 2014, that had, it was like Zayn and Neville and Breeze and Kidd. Like, that was great stuff. But I laugh when people say, oh, it's not as good, or NXT's really fallen. It's like, really? Because from the looks of it, they're doing okay right now. I think they're doing pretty damn good. You look at the roster of talent they're stockpiled with right now. You've got Almas, who's finally come into his own. You've got Aleister Black, Johnny Gargano, you have Tommaso Ciampa, Adam Cole, Ricochet, War Machine, Red Dragon, EC3, Velveteen Dream, all the women, a lot of them from the Mae Young Classic that they're finally bringing in. You got homegrown guys that they're taking their time with, like Heavy Machinery. I think Otis, of the two of them, Otis is the one who I'm entertained as all hell by. Lars Sullivan, they're taking their time with him. He could be something big as well. They've got a great group of guys and girls down there right now. And I think this is shaping up to be a great year for that brand, where even if you know, two or three guys suddenly get called up to the main roster, they seem to have enough of a nucleus there now where they can actually survive that, you know what I mean, and plug in somebody else. And Drew McIntyre, who I didn't even mention, who's out hurt, he'll be back in a few months. I assume he'll go back to NXT. Maybe they'll just shoot him to the main roster, but you've got him waiting in the wings as well. Here's another guy who left, came back like a new man, reinvented himself. So I think they got a pretty good group of people there right now. The show opened with Kyle O'Reilly and Bobby Fish defending their NXT Tag Team titles against the Authors of Pain. I thought the match was kind of dull most of the way. I seem to be in the minority on this, but I really didn't like this match until the last few minutes. Then it finally picked up. It's the first time AOP has really worked as the baby faces. and sold. I think it was Akam was selling his knee for a good part of it. They hit the Super Collider, but O'Reilly turned it into a Hurricanrana, sent Akam hurling into Rezar. Rezar falls out of the ring. Akam then gets rolled up by Kyle O'Reilly for the pin. They redeemed it there in those last few minutes because I really wasn't a fan of this until the end. Cassius Ohno and the Velveteen Dream. Velveteen Dream is on a roll. The people love him. He got a huge ovation coming out. They cheered him throughout the entire match. Nobody cared about poor Cassius Ohno. They did this great video feature on this guy earlier in the day. They put this up on YouTube. It's like this 8-minute little mini documentary on him. It's actually tremendous stuff. It makes you just want to root for the guy by the time you're done watching it. And maybe they should have put that up on the big screen before this match, because people just did not care at all. They were all in on Dream. They were even booing Ohno in certain parts. Dream promised a knockout, because of course KO, he's the knockout artist. Dream promised the knockout in the first 30 seconds of the match. Came out, there was some guy holding a pillow with a custom mouthpiece on it for him to use, like he's a fighter. I don't know who the guy was. There's this big black guy standing there holding the pillow in his hand, really big jacked up. I'm guessing he's one of the people at the Performance Center. I have no idea who that guy is, so if somebody knows, let me know. I'm watching him standing there just holding the pillow, and I had visions of Batista back in the day when he was the Deacon, and he had the money box around his neck. I mean, who would have thought back then that that guy would go on to become world champion and one of the biggest guys in the company, and who knows? I want to find out who this guy is, because he could be the next Batista. You never know, man. That's how you get started. One day you're standing there with a pillow in your hand, the next day you're the world champion. You never know how these things work. He knocked down Ohno in the first, it was probably about 10 seconds left. People went nuts. He knocked him down. He's jumping up and down like he knocked him out. He won the fight. He's celebrating. People are cheering. Of course, it's a wrestling match, so he didn't pin him. And Ohno got up and whacked him right in the mouth, knocked him out of the ring. There were a few spots late where things sort of started to fall apart. Things were going well, and then it seemed like Dream was being a little overambitious, and he was trying certain things. He would try to lift up Ohno, and look, Ono's a big guy. You know, he's a big boy. He's every bit of 260. It's gotta be. And Dream dropped him a couple times there, and he finally hit a rolling Death Valley driver, then hit the purple Rainmaker elbow off the top row. Actually, he stood on the top of the post. They have that thing around the post now. It's almost like a little platform. So he stood on top of the ring post, dove off, hit the elbow, got the pin, and the Velveteen Dream picks up the win. The fans in Philly were very forgiving, more than I think they would have been for almost anybody else when they kind of botched up some of those moves. But they loved the Velveteen Dream so much, they let it slide. And the right man won. You know, Dream lost to Aleister Black at the last TakeOver show. He lost to Johnny Gargano on TV last week. He needed this win. He got the win. And I think he's a great example of why NXT needs a secondary championship right now. I don't see him, you know, going for the NXT title anytime soon. But I think you're going to reach a point very soon where you've got to have him fighting for something. And I think if you had, let's say NXT had its own version of the Intercontinental title, he would be the perfect candidate for it. He could hold on to that thing for the next year. Because he still has a lot, you know, he's got a ways to go. He's not at the point where he should be wrestling for the NXT title. And he's a great example of why I would advocate for there being a secondary belt there right now. We had Ember Moon against Shayna Baszler for the NXT Women's Championship. Nice MMA-style, kind of Goldberg-style entrance for Shayna. They showed her walking to the ring from the back. Baszler stomped on the arm of Ember Moon during the match the same way she did to Dakota Kai on TV a few weeks ago. It looks great. Just the visual of the move when she stomps on it, even in slow-mo, it looks like she's, you know, breaking this poor girl's arm. Ember is selling it like her arm is broken. Eventually she's able to hit the Eclipse, but she can't follow up. She's in so much agony. She must have landed on her arm. She's in pain. She can't go for the pin. Doctors come out to check on her. People start chanting bullshit. She finally does go over to Baszler, but so much time has gone by. Baszler has recovered. She's been laying there playing possum, and she grabs the arm. She goes for an armbar, and what followed was about 3 or 4 straight minutes of Ember trying every possible way she could to fight out of this armbar. She's scrambling. She's reaching for the ropes with her feet. She gets to the rope. Shayna pulls her back into the middle. Finally, Ember rolls through, gets Shayna's shoulders down for the three, gets the pin. Place goes nuts. Now, I said going into this, Shayna Baszler should not be losing. But if they were going to do it, this was the way to do it. Make it a fluke win and have Baszler just destroy her after the match, which is what she did. She chased her down to the aisleway. She choked her out. Ember was when she came to, she was slobbering all over herself. Baszler, yeah, I got a lot of tweets from people saying, I don't know what you see in her. She's boring. Look, she's not the most dynamic personality in the world. But everyone sort of has their own charisma. I feel like she's got her own charisma. Brock has his own charisma. But, like, the charisma that somebody like Brock Lesnar has is very different than the charisma of the New Day, right? So, I'm not going to see Brock out there with a box of bootios doing a dance. I mean, we did see him once dancing mariachi with a sombrero on his head on SmackDown back in the day. But it's different types of charisma here. She's got her own personality. She's playing that very strict, stern, you know, kind of MMA fighter. But she's got that smirk that you just want to see somebody knock off her face. And she's a bully. You know, she's easy to hate. She's a great heel. I thought the finish was great. Some of you hated it because you thought that it was unrealistic. She was in the hold. It went on for too long. How could she be in the hold for so long without tapping or getting her arm snapped? If this were real, you know, like, the whole if this were real argument, I think we got to put that on the side right now. I mean, if this were real, there are a lot of things that would be very different. Believe me. Okay. But the thing why didn't bother me was Ember kept clasping her hands together. So at no point, or maybe one or two points, did Shayna really like lock the move in and really wrench the arm back all the way and bend it back where it's like, ooh, like, you know, she was constantly trying to clasp her hands together and she couldn't really get the move locked in. That's why it went on for so long. Look, if this were a real fight, that's exactly what Ember would be doing. She'd be fighting for her life. She would be moving around and she would be trying everything she possibly could do to get out of this move, and it would go on. It could go on for a few minutes. So people said, oh, it's unrealistic. I thought it was very realistic. That's how I saw it. I thought it was fine. I liked the finish. I thought it was dramatic. I thought it was well done. I thought Baszler came off exactly the way that you wanted her to come off. She came off like a bully and a sore loser when this thing was over, which was the point. They used her to make Ember look tough. Kind of like how they used Diesel before he left for WCW. They used Diesel in that no-holds-barred match to make Shawn Michaels look tough. What was the one big knock on Shawn Michaels back then? This guy's not tough. This guy can't be a world champion. He dances around. Look at him. He's like a stripper. He's in Playgirl. I can't take this guy seriously as the world champion. So what's the first thing they do with him after he wins the belt? They put him in a hardcore match against Diesel. Shawn Michaels won that match by using some guy's fake leg to hit Diesel in the head with it. Right? He took a powerbomb through the announce table. This is the kind of stuff you wouldn't see back then in WWE. That was an effective use of one guy to make the other guy look tough, and I think that's kind of what they did here. Right? They made Baszler, or had Baszler, or used her to make Ember look tough. So I think from both angles, it worked well. Adam Cole and Aleister Black in an Extreme Rules match, speaking of hardcore. This is where the show really picked up. Up to this point, the show was good. It wasn't blowaway or anything, but it was good. But here's where things took a turn for the better. This was an excellent hardcore match. Cole sliced his thumb open somehow early in the match and was bleeding badly. Doctors had to come in and quickly wrap the thumb in black tape so he could continue the match. There was a spot where Aleister was up on the ropes. He was kind of outside the ring, climbing up top. Cole hit him in the head with a chair. He fell backwards. There were two tables that had been set up earlier outside the ring. And just complete dead weight. Aleister just falls back. Boom. Crashes and burns through the tables. There was the one spot with the chairs. And I know you guys know. If you saw the match, you know what I'm talking about. My spine hurt watching this. So Cole has two steel chairs. He sets them up in the ring where the seats are adjacent to each other. Right? We've seen this before, and guys sometimes get slammed through them. But then he says, you know what, I got a different idea. And he turns the chairs around, like you would for a game of musical chairs, where the chairs are back to back. And he goes to pick up Aleister Black. Black picks him up on his shoulders instead, gives him basically an attitude adjustment onto the edges of the chair. Now, he kind of rolled off. He did, you know, he did what he could to not take the full brunt of the impact. But there's no way not to take impact on that move. That was such an insanely stupid thing for him to do. Like, I don't want to, like, you know, browbeat the guy too much because I like him and he's got my respect, you know, between the thumb and this, and, you know, he took a beating last night. But my God, what a stupid move that was. Why would you do that? That's all. I'm sitting there going, why? Why would you do that? I had flashbacks to Shawn Michaels hitting his back on the edge of the casket. Cost him 4 years of his career. There's no need to take a bump like that. I don't want to see Adam Cole on the shelf for 4 years. So Aleister had the match won. Fish and O'Reilly interfered. Of course they would. It's no DQ. Why wouldn't they? That brought out Sanity. Sanity fought them off. Killian Dane. We couldn't have interference without there being a dive. So Killian Dane did a dive through the ropes, killed everybody. Wiped them all out. Black put Cole through the announce table with the double knees. He jumped up. It was a great spot. Looked great. He hit the fade to Black for the win, or Black Mass. Has the name changed? I've seen the move referred to as fade to Black. I thought it was Black Mass. Maybe they were wrong. I don't know. But he hit the kick. He got the win. That's two match of the year caliber matches back to back now for Aleister Black. He had the match with the Velveteen Dream in San Antonio. And now this match here against Adam Cole. I'm thinking at this point when this match ends, this is going to be a tough act to follow. I don't know how these guys in the main event are going to follow this. But they did. Oh yes, they did. It was Andrade Cien Almas against Johnny Gargano for the NXT Championship. This is, and I wanted to wait until this morning, because I thought this last night, I tweeted this, I said in the morning, let's see if I still feel the same way. I'll think about this a little bit more. I stand by what I said. This was the greatest NXT match that I have ever seen. It is up there with Sasha and Bayley from Brooklyn. It's up there with Zayn and Nakamura from Dallas. It's up with that Fatal 4-Way I mentioned earlier that had Kid and Zayn and Neville and Breeze. Pete Dunne and Tyler Bate last year in Chicago. That was my match of the year. One of the best NXT matches I've ever seen. I think it even bested that match. This was outstanding. And the thing about Johnny Gargano, and I think why I like the guy so much, besides the fact that he's just a great fucking professional wrestler, is he reminds me a lot of Bret Hart. And you guys know that Bret Hart is my all-time favorite. If I had to pick one wrestler who's my favorite all-time, it's Bret Hart. Especially Bret from that like 92 to 94 period. And the thing about Bret Hart that I love so much about his matches, and very few people have been able to do this since then, his selling. Bret was like the one guy I would watch, even when I was younger, let alone now, where his matches felt like it felt real. It felt like this guy is getting his ass kicked. You know, whether he was getting whipped into the corner turnbuckles, you know, back first, chest first, getting the shit kicked out of him, his facial expressions, his mannerisms, like you felt like this guy is getting his ass kicked. And I can't think of anybody else in WWE right now, main roster or NXT, who sells the way that Johnny Gargano does. The guy is incredible. He's like this hybrid mix right now of Bret Hart and Daniel Bryan. And the comparison with Daniel Bryan being that he's the scrappy underdog who people love. You know, when people say, well, this WWE doesn't need Daniel Bryan back. They got Johnny Gargano. He could be the next Daniel Bryan on the main roster. You know what? He could be. The potential is there. He's an easy-to-like guy. You put him on the main roster. If people don't think he's getting a fair shake, you see. People start chanting his name like they used to chant Daniel Bryan. Only thing he has to do, he has to come up with a catchy thing. Bryan had the yes chant. So Johnny has to come up with something himself. But he's got that potential because he has that thing about him. He seems like a normal, down-to-earth guy who can go, and who's so easy to like. You can't root against this guy. He's so good at what he does. You can't boo this man. He's got that going for him. Gargano had his entire family ringside for this match, including his wife, NXT's newest signee, Candice LeRae. Gargano's father, I think, was the only one missing. They mentioned that he had just undergone quadruple bypass surgery, so hopefully he's on the mend. The chemistry between these two is off the charts. Their first two matches were excellent. This was, I thought, the best of the three, which I guess it would have to be if I'm calling this the best NXT match I've ever seen. So many near falls, just too many to recap. Zelina Vega, who was one of the big kind of turnaround points of that whole Almas act. It was getting rid of the top hat and the suspenders. It was a change in attitude. And it was adding Zelina Vega to the act. All those things have just transformed Almas into almost like a completely different person now. But she got involved in the match. She jumped off the apron, gave Johnny a Rana into the steel steps. We've seen her do that before. Almas brought him back in the ring, gave him the hammerlock DDT. This was one of the near falls. You thought, okay, it's over. And they got you. The last second, Johnny kicked out. Place went nuts. He rolled out to the floor. So here comes Vega. She's marching around to the other side of the ring. She's going to kick Johnny's ass. And it happened to be the side of the ring where Johnny's family was in the front row. And sure enough, out of the crowd comes Candice LeRae. She hops the barricade, spears Vega down to the ground. Everybody is going crazy. I haven't been this happy to see that spot since Elizabeth hopped the barricade at WrestleMania 7 and threw Sherry out of the ring before reuniting with the Macho Man. That's kind of what this reminded me of on a lower level. And so she chased Vega to the back. And by the way, can I just say, fuck Sonny? Can I say that? I mean, I know everybody else already has, but she went on her Facebook page this past week and made some really disparaging remarks about Candice LeRae. Apparently Tammy was going off on intergender wrestling and how it's the downfall of the wrestling business or something to that effect. And she said anybody who supports it should bury themselves alive. And when somebody pointed out that Candice was just signed by WWE and she was very well known on the independent scene for being part of these intergender matches, she said Candice was signed to developmental because she must be too ugly to ever make it to the big show. Unless they give her some major plastic surgery like they did Bayley. What a gross human being she is, Sonny. What an absolute disgusting human being. So, I just had to say that. Almas ended up winning clean with the top rope DDT he beat McIntyre with. Crowd was deflated when the referee hit the three, but this was just a roller coaster ride for 30 minutes. I think it went a little over half an hour. I said on Twitter it would be a mistake. This was when the match was going on. I said it would be a mistake to take that title off of Almas this soon. This guy is like a totally different performer than what we saw his first 6 months or his first year or so in NXT. He's had some incredible matches with different opponents. Johnny Gargano, Oney Lorcan, Drew McIntyre. I used to just moan. This guy would come out. I'd be like, ugh. That was my reaction. Whenever this guy's music would hit and he would come out, I wouldn't care until he started wrestling. And 9 times out of 10, this guy would end up having this great match that would make me go, wow, that was actually really good. I've been sleeping on this guy for a while. I got to pay more attention. And now he's just exploded. And he's had all these great matches and he's very entertaining. He's got the act down pat. I just felt like it would be a big mistake because he deserves more than just a couple of months and one takeover match with the belt. I thought it would be a waste to get the belt off him this soon. I was very happy to see him pick up the win here. Now, I'm convinced he's going to drop it in New Orleans, probably to Aleister Black, but he needs that championship more than Gargano does right now. Gargano has a ready-made blood feud waiting for him with Tommaso Ciampa. That's going to take him at least through New Orleans, if not the next 6 months. Because they could build up the first match with Gargano and Ciampa for New Orleans. And again, these takeovers don't happen every single month. They could have the rematch in Brooklyn. They could do some kind of stipulation match with them in Brooklyn. So this Ciampa-Gargano feud may take up most of 2018. Johnny is good to go. He's taken care of. He's got something to do. He doesn't need the championship. This was his first title match. He's going to have more. But without that title, what does Almas have in terms of stories, in terms of direction, in terms of what they do with him? You know, he's got a lot less going for him, I think, if you take that championship away from him right now. He doesn't have a real direction. Unless they call him up, and I'm not exactly confident about that if they do. I mean, maybe he'll do all right, you know, if they're looking for like that one Latin star to push since the Del Rio experiment was such a failure. If they see all the success he's having in NXT, they might actually give him a fighting chance on the main roster. And if Zelina is brought up with him, I think the two of them together, they probably will do pretty good. But NXT, I think, is really the best place for him right now. And it was just too early to take the title from him, so I'm glad they didn't. Just outstanding action, outstanding storytelling throughout the entire match, dramatic near falls, top-notch selling by Gargano, a great spot with Candice tackling Zelina, chasing her out of the arena, and then Almas getting a clean win. Now, if I could change one thing about this, and I'm not one to argue with clean finishes, okay? It made the champion look strong, which is great. But if I had one nit to pick here, I would have had Ciampa cost Gargano the match at the very last second. I would have had Almas and the Gargano escape that last time, ready to tap, place going nuts. All of a sudden, Ciampa slides in. You film it in such a way where you don't see him slide into the ring. You hear the crowd go, like, you know, there's some kind of commotion, like they see something we can't. And all of a sudden, he just smashes the crutch over Gargano's head for the DQ. Just imagine the nuclear heat that man would have had for ruining one of the best championship matches that we've ever seen in NXT. That's my only critique of this. That's my only critique. Because Ciampa was there. If Ciampa wasn't physically ready to come back, then he's not ready to come back. But he was there, right? They did it after the match instead of having it cause the end of the match. So there's Gargano and Candice. They're up on stage getting an ovation. The copyright hits the screen. You know, Tommaso Ciampa, we know now, if there's one person who doesn't give a fuck when a show is supposed to end, it's Tommaso Ciampa, because it's the second time now that he basically said, fuck that copyright, and he beat the crap out of Johnny Gargano after the show was supposed to be over. Hit him in the back with a crutch, left him laying. I thought it was great. Sets up the obvious match for New Orleans, but I couldn't help but just sit there thinking, if he was there, why didn't you have it, like, factor into the end of the match? You know what I mean? Like, he should have, like, at the very last second, if he hit him with that crutch, But, again, whatever. It's a minor criticism. This was still great stuff. If you missed it, you owe it to yourself to go back and check it out. At least those last two matches. I mean, I would check out most of the show, but those last two matches were, you know, taken together, or even on their own. The Rumble has its work cut out for it. Those guys have their work cut out for them tonight. If there's anything on this Royal Rumble show that's as good or better than what we saw last night, this is going to end up being a hell of a weekend. That's all I have to say about that. NXT this Wednesday should be a good one. We've got a Tyler Bate-Roderick Strong match. The winner will get a shot at Pete Dunne's WWE United Kingdom Championship. The return of TM61, they're back in action this week, and they're promoting a match with Lacey Evans against Nikki Cross. So that's coming up on the show. Unless they're breaking it up over the next 2 weeks. I'm pretty sure all of this is set for Wednesday's show, so that's something to look forward to. Let's get to your mailbag questions, because we're running out of time here. If you have questions, email me, thesolomonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. This first thing real quick is just to follow up on the Jey Uso DWI story from last week. I heard from Chris, who is a longtime fan of the podcast. In fact, he sat behind me at WrestleMania a few years ago in Dallas. We got to talk. He happens to be an attorney in Hidalgo County, where Uso was arrested. So, small world. I was curious what he might be facing, so he was able to shed a little bit more light on what he could be in store for. He said, in Texas, you can be charged with a higher degree misdemeanor based on your blood alcohol concentration. And we still don't know what his blood alcohol was. That hasn't been released as far as I know. But if your blood alcohol content is greater than or equal to a 0.15, it would be considered a Class A. From what was initially reported, he appears to have been charged with a Class B misdemeanor, which could mean he either didn't provide a sample, or if he did provide a sample, it was below a 0.15. Usually the blood alcohol stuff isn't made public until the person goes to court. So for a Class B, punishment is up to a $2,000 fine, 180 days in jail potentially. For a Class A, it's up to a $4,000 fine, up to 1 year in county jail. Chris says he probably won't be due in court for a good 3 to 6 months. And there's always the chance that he could have his case dismissed by going through different court programs and such. So he's the lawyer. I'm not. But my sense is what I'm hearing here is really not any different than what I thought last week. Probably not something that's going to end up being a very big deal for him. So thank you to Chris for that insight. Alexandru, the Marietta Mahler, writes in, longtime fan of the show. Was wondering if you've seen, and if so, what your thought was of the NWA empty arena match between Josephus and Tim Storm. I thought it was great. A couple of bumps and a great storytelling can go a long way. I enjoyed it. I watched it. I did watch it after it was posted. And I thought it was very entertaining. I like matches like that. I mean, I think back to The Rock and Mankind and how they did their empty arena match during the halftime heat thing in 99. It's fun. Two guys brawling all over the building, you know, through the stands, into the backstage area or wherever. They didn't really go backstage here, but I liked it. I mean, it was mostly, I'd say 90% of it was just Tim Storm beating on this guy. And just Josephus just moaning and crying and in pain. And then finally, in like the last couple of minutes, he picks up the win. But that bump that Tim Storm took, oh my God, that last bump, I'm surprised he didn't kill himself. Now, Tim Storm is not a young guy. He's an older guy. He's in his early to mid-50s, probably. And they had, there was, I think, a ladder bridge set up outside from the ring apron to the announce desk, if I'm remembering correctly. And Storm was up on the ropes outside the ring. He got hit with a chair. He got knocked off. But the way he landed, he like landed on his head, on the floor. Ugh, looked like a terrible bump. Somehow he survived. That was the end of the match. Thank God the match ended there. It's one of those things where if he would have kicked out, that would have been ridiculous. How many times have we seen matches like that where there's a spot like that, it should be the end. The guy kicks out, but then he gets kicked. And then he gets pinned. It's like, why couldn't the match end before? Why'd you have to keep it going? There was no going on with that match after that bump. He was done for. So, poor Tim Storm. I hope he's okay. I also had people asking me about the Barbed Wire Massacre match that Impact did that apparently was too risque for Pop TV to air, so it never aired on TV. I think it aired on Twitch, or they put it on their YouTube channel. I did watch that. I'm not a fan of those matches, the barbed wire stuff. Like, if you do a barbed wire spot, you wrap something in barbed wire, hit them with it, that's fine. I was never a fan of, like, the barbed wire rope matches where these guys just tear themselves to shreds for no reason at all. It's just not my thing. So, kudos to them. I mean, they took some punishment in that match. Can't really say I enjoyed it just because it's just not my thing. And also, I thought Jeremy Borash, who normally is pretty good when I hear him doing commentary and stuff like that, he was very reserved. I thought there were certain parts of that match that warranted more of a reaction. It was like he was sedated almost, it felt like, during that match. So I didn't think the announcing was all that great either. But hey, if that's your cup of tea, then more power to you. But I'm not really a big fan of that kind of stuff. This person does not want me to use his real name, so I won't. Could you please explain what the Undertaker Boy Canyon incident was? I've heard it mentioned only a couple of times, but have no idea what it could be. I assume it has something to do with Chris Canyon, but I am not sure. You are correct. You are correct. Simon Dean talked about this a few years back in a shoot interview that he did. So the short story is that Canyon, who was gay, right? That was pretty well known. He was gay. He wanted to portray an openly gay character on TV. And he didn't want it to be like Gold Dust or Orlando Jordan pouring milk all over himself in TNA. And he didn't want it to be anything like that. He just wanted nothing stereotypical. He just wanted where it would just so happen that he was the first openly gay wrestler ever on TV. And he pitched the idea to WWE, and WWE shot the idea down. What they ended up having him do was one TV segment to help further the feud on SmackDown at the time between The Big Show and The Undertaker, where Canyon popped out of a giant gift box. Now, I remember this, and I remember a different segment where I think Brother Love popped out of a giant box and had a puppy dog and gave it to The Undertaker. That might have also been part of this feud, but Canyon pops out of this giant box. And The Undertaker is just standing there. And Canyon is dressed, he's like dressed up like George Michael. And he starts singing a Boy George song. And Undertaker, after being attacked from behind, Canyon attacks him, completely beats the shit out of this guy, hits him with one of the hardest chair shots to the head that you will ever see. And you know, coming off that question last week I got about the chair shot that Undertaker gave Mr. Kennedy at Survivor Series, and when I think of the one also that Undertaker gave to Maven, I think it was at the Royal Rumble, he pasted him right in the head real hard with a chair. I do see a pattern here. I got to tell you, Undertaker comes off as a bit of an asshole here. I mean, we can sit and pay our respects to The Undertaker and talk about what a great guy he is and all that, but boy, does he come off like a real asshole when you see all these things back to back to back like this. So that's what happened. They rejected his idea for a gay character, and they mocked him for it by having him dress up as Boy George and get the hell beaten out of him by The Undertaker. He was very open about who he was, and WWE treated the guy like a joke. Scotty from Georgia, with the announcement of Goldberg going into the Hall of Fame this year, got me thinking about Bret Hart's Hall of Fame induction in 2006. I know he was at the ceremony the night before WrestleMania, but not there for the class presentation at Mania itself. Was it because he still had beef with the company and Vince at the time, or was it because of some other circumstances? He still had beef with Vince. He made it very clear to them he was not interested in coming back for anything other than the Hall of Fame induction. He was always very protective of his legacy. I don't even know that he wanted to even come back were it not for the Hall of Fame was just so important to him and his legacy and how people remember him, and so he agreed to do it. But the condition was he would only come in for the ceremony, give a speech, and he was going to fly out the next morning. He didn't want to be at Mania itself. He didn't want to participate in any sort of angle, which I'm sure the company would have loved him to do, and they may have even pitched the idea to him. They were having a match with Shawn Michaels and Vince McMahon at that WrestleMania. You don't think they wanted Bret Hart involved in that in some way? You don't think they wanted him to interfere or be a referee or play a role of some kind? Of course they did. But he just didn't want any part of it. Colin from Cali, the Tinder guy, which he will forever be known as here on this show. I was watching the Royal Rumble matches in order and watching the 1991 Rumble. At number 18, the buzzer rings and nobody comes out. The announcers then say that he has forfeited his spot. I assume whoever was in that spot would come out later, but nothing ever happened. Can you explain who was supposed to be in that spot and if there was ever any resolution to this? That spot belonged to the Macho Man Randy Savage. The Macho King, I should say. It was hard to know back then who it was supposed to be because back then there was no theme music. You know, once those first two guys came out, that was it. There was no more theme music during the Rumble itself. The buzzer would go off and just some random person would come out. So you never really, like, somebody not coming out, you have no idea. You have no idea who was supposed to be in that spot. But by the time the Rumble was over, by process of elimination, okay, who was in, who wasn't in, you kind of figured out, oh, it was the Macho Man. Earlier in the show, he and Sherry had interfered in the WWF title match between the Ultimate Warrior and Sergeant Slaughter. And Savage just whacked Warrior right in the face with his royal scepter, because he was the king at the time. It was actually a hell of a shot. That thing shattered on impact. After that, Savage got the hell out of Dodge, and he ended up no-showing the Rumble because he didn't want the Warrior to come find him. Simple as that. So that was just part of the whole angle. He was running scared, and he gave up his spot. He sacrificed his spot in the Royal Rumble match because he didn't want to be killed by the Ultimate Warrior. Dylan from Toronto, when Undertaker returned as the American Badass in 2000, I was in elementary school, and I remember the rumor that some kid got paralyzed with a tombstone while playing wrestling at home. So WWE banned the move, and instead Undertaker just gave everybody a huge wedgie powerbomb for a few years. Do you know the story behind the last ride in the lost years of the tombstone? I've never seen this confirmed anywhere. I've never seen this confirmed by Undertaker or Triple H, so who knows for sure. But the story I always heard was that the night Undertaker debuted as the American Badass and came back at the end of that Iron Man match at Judgment Day, he gave Triple H a tombstone. But if you remember, that whole finish was botched because the timing was way, way off. And from what I understand, the finish was supposed to be Rock having enough time to hit one last rock bottom and go for the pin, but time would expire. They didn't even have time for that. Undertaker gave him a choke slam. The buzzer went off. He picked up Triple H. I guess he probably rushed it, gave him a tombstone, but in doing so, he literally dropped Triple H on his head. He connected a little too well with that move, and I don't know if he suffered a stinger, if it was just a little knock on the head. I don't know exactly the severity of the injury, but apparently he was hurt on that tombstone, and it was after that that he started using the last ride. We didn't see him use the tombstone for years. Actually, that's not true. We saw him use it the following year, but it was many, many, many months before we saw him use that pile driver again. I never heard the story about the kid being paralyzed with the move, but I think it was Triple H who got hurt that night, and that caused the change. And finally, Edward from Charlotte, North Carolina. Have you heard the story of Snoop Dogg cussing out Kevin Dunn? On an episode of Something to Wrestle With, Bruce Pritchard tells the story. I was not aware of the story until I got this question from Edward. And so I went and listened to Pritchard's podcast, because I'm always down for a good Kevin Dunn story. It is the episode, if you want to go back and listen to it, that he did last May. It was an entire episode devoted to Eric Bischoff. And on the episode, Pritchard talks about Bischoff's connections to the Girls Gone Wild franchise. Apparently, he was good friends with the guy who started Girls Gone Wild. And he convinced, Bischoff did, he convinced Vince McMahon, this was back around 2002, he convinced Vince to help co-promote a Girls Gone Wild event. Snoop Dogg happened to be part of that event. And so Kevin Dunn, of all people, they have Kevin Dunn running production of this Girls Gone Wild event. Apparently, they were all warned beforehand. That whole crew, all the WWF people were warned beforehand by the cops. No drugs. If we smell marijuana, we're going to arrest people. If we see any underage drinking going on, we're going to shut this shit down. We're going to arrest people. Okay, so they were warned about this beforehand. Snoop, meanwhile, is late. He's a late, arriver here to the event. Kevin Dunn is freaking out. Finally, Snoop Dogg arrives. Steps out of the limousine. All you see is smoke coming out of the limo, of course. Kevin Dunn is pissed. Very upset because Snoop is late. He missed all the rehearsals. He walks over to Snoop Dogg. And this is just visualizing this in my head is just fantastic. So Kevin Dunn walks over to Snoop. And he starts explaining to him everything that we're going to do. Here's the plan. Here's what we're going to do here at this event. All the while, Snoop is smoking a cigar, looking off into the distance somewhere. Maybe he's looking at the women. Probably is looking at the women. He's not paying attention, though, seemingly, to Kevin Dunn. He's not looking at Kevin Dunn. Kevin Dunn is getting real pissed now because Snoop won't even make eye contact with him. He won't even acknowledge his presence. Finally, and without ever looking at Kevin Dunn, he still won't look at him. Okay? Finally, Snoop just goes, "Hey, motherfucker, just because I ain't looking at you don't mean I ain't hearing you. I got this shit." And he walks off. Now, Pritchard wasn't there himself to see it, but he said in a matter of minutes, he got phone calls from two different WWE production people freaking out about how awesome it was that Kevin Dunn got punked out in front of everybody by Snoop Dogg. And Bischoff was there too, and apparently Bischoff would sometimes tell the same story. So for that story alone, there may be no celebrity inductee more deserving of being in the WWE Hall of Fame than Snoop Dogg. Follow me on Twitter, @Solomonster. I'll be live tweeting throughout the Royal Rumble tonight. I am very close to 25,000 followers on Twitter. And I can't thank you enough if you have deemed me worthy of a follow and you follow my ramblings on there. I thank you. So hop on there, @Solomonster. You still have a few hours left. If you're listening to this on Royal Rumble Sunday, you have up until about an hour or so before the pay-per-view to get in on that pool. It's in the Facebook group. Get in on that. You might be a Ultimate Rumble pool winner when all is said and done. And again, I'm going to hopefully make time in the next couple days to watch that Tanahashi-Suzuki match from the New Japan show last night for the Intercontinental Championship. I know Suzuki won the title from him. Apparently, it was a great match. What else is new? And so I'm planning on watching that, and I might talk about it next week on the show. We'll see. I still have my New Japan World subscription. They have another big show coming up. I think February 10th is one of the bigger shows, the next like really big show they have coming up. And I do plan on watching it. So I'll let you guys know if I do and what I think about that. And that's about it. This is a big show this week. A lot to cover. Don't forget, if you would like to give this show a 5-star rating and a review in iTunes or Stitcher, you may do so. We are a 5-star rated podcast. Thank you, as always, for the support. Be well. Stay safe. Enjoy the Royal Rumble tonight. Tune into YouTube, because a few hours later, my review should be up there, hopefully working fine this time. And we'll be back with a brand new podcast. That'll be episode 533 on Super Bowl Sunday. I'll have a Super Bowl Sunday prediction next week. That should be fun. So until then, take care, guys. Enjoy the Rumble.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solomonster sounds off.
They have Kane in the back. This is what he said. Tonight, I will delight as I enter the abyss with a fellow monster. But it is I who will climb out alone and with a smile across my face.
Oh, oh my God.
What do they think this is, Shakespeare? I was driving yesterday, and some asshole double parks his car in the service lane. I should have cut a promo the way the WWE would script one out for me. Why art thou parking like one's smelly orifice? I wish 1,000 deaths upon thee. Then I could do a fucking tope and we could fade to commercial.
Since 2007, The Solomonster Sounds Off. Available at thesolomonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solomonster Sound Off.